Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, 45 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by GM OnStar. Colfax remains closed at Xavier following an early morning police shooting. Denver police arrested 23-year-old Robert Zamora at 1337 Raleigh Street following an intense manhunt. Sonny Lucas lives near where the shooting happened and says it was a chaotic and frightening experience while police look for the shooting suspect.
Three or four helicopters and cameramen all over the place, and every corner's got a police car on it. Something's going on. So you got to ask, you know, inquiring minds like to know what's going on in my neighborhood.
Denver police officer Kevin Kreitzer pulled over Zamora for speeding. When Zamora refused to show his hands, Kreitzer asked Zamora to step out of the car. Investigators say that's when Zamora shot Kreitzer in the arm. Kreitzer fired back but didn't hit Zamora, who then fled. Zamora was found an hour and a half later hiding behind a house near where he lives. Kreitzer is in good condition. He's expected to be released from Denver Medical Center later today. Colorado's 2004 legislative session is officially underway. The usual pomp and circumstance included addresses from the Senate's president and minority leader. A key issue this year is the matter of the lawmakers simply getting along after last year's fight over redistricting. Senate President John Andrews sounded a conciliatory note.
We have struggled over putting the map together. Both sides had their reasons. Neither side was blameless. Battle took a toll, no doubt about it. But now it's up to the judges, not to us anymore.
Andrews didn't have an olive branch, but he did have a bunch of flowers for Minority Leader Joan Fitzgerald.
There's something about flowers that remind me of a funeral, so it makes me a little bit nervous.
In addition to getting the state's legislative district mess sorted out, our lawmakers will fight over economic issues, such as Tabor and Amendment 23. Next up is the State of the State address, set for tomorrow with Governor Bill Owens. The Elbert County Sheriff's Department has made a recommendation to charge the owner of three pit bulls responsible for a fatal attack with felonies. Jennifer Brooke was killed on November 30th after being attacked by the three rampaging dogs. The recommended charges against Jacqueline McEwen are for criminally negligent homicide and violation of the dangerous dog law. The dogs attacked two other people before being killed by the son of one of the surviving victims. Another person, William Gladney, will also be charged as a co-owner of those dogs. Nine people went to the hospital, three homes left uninhabitable after an explosion at a Denver duplex last night. Investigators think the blast at 8th and Kalamath might have been caused by natural gas or a portable heating unit inside the home. Firefighters were able to contain that blaze quickly. President Bush is preparing to outline sweeping immigration reform proposals this afternoon. They're designed to make it easier for immigrants to legally work in the U.S. Millions of illegal immigrants would be granted temporary legal status if they can prove they have jobs. The White House claims the move promotes compassion and will help make the nation's borders more secure. Critics accuse the president of pandering to Hispanics in an election year. The U.S. and France are working together to track down an Afghan man behind an aviation scare that has forced a flurry of cancellations and delays to U.S.-bound flights. The man, thought to have ties to al-Qaeda, is suspected of preparing an attack against a canceled December 24th flight from Paris to Los Angeles. The search comes as European countries study Washington's demands that airlines carry armed air marshals on some U.S.-bound planes. Some overseas airlines have vowed to cancel flights rather than comply. Hundreds of Iraqi prisoners could soon be home with their families. U.S. officials in Baghdad say they plan to grant amnesty to about 500 detainees deemed low-level security threats. The move comes amid a flurry of complaints by Iraqi families saying loved ones were being unjustly held. On Wall Street, stocks were mixed just before the top of the hour. The Dow is down over 31 points, the NASDAQ up just over 12, the S&P 500 up just about three-quarters of a point. In sports, the Denver Nuggets are home tonight playing host to the L.A. Lakers. Nuggets lost by 2 points the last time they played L.A. in December. Colorado Avalanche shut out the Columbus Blue Jackets 6-0 at the Pepsi Center last night. It was the first time since November 15th that Colorado left wing Paul Kariya was in the game. He said it was good to have all the Avs marquee players suited up for the game.
We haven't been together basically since the start of the season, so it's nice that we're all back, and hopefully all the injuries are behind us and we can stay healthy the rest of the year.
The Avs have tonight off before heading to Nashville tomorrow to play the Predators. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button and OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by... This is going to be brought to you by RAD, I should say, and a pretty quiet drive. Nothing really going on except for that police investigation. Colfax right at Xavier, and that's going to have some parameters. Colfax to 11th, Sheridan to Tennyson. RAD recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving says don't take your lifestyle on the road. Designate before you celebrate. Learn more at RAD.org. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Aaron Williams with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Looks like we're going to have much warmer weather for the next couple of days. Expect mostly cloudy skies today with high temperatures warming up to seasonable levels right around 41 degrees. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, dipping our low to 22. Then for Thursday, plenty of sunshine warming up to a high of 46. And downright balmy for Friday, mostly sunny and a high of 51. For the Weather Channel, I'm Aaron Williams on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 45 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and we have a lot that we have to talk about. I just want to remind you we're going to be doing the show live from the Denver Press Club this Friday. Our focus will be the rodeo, and we're going to have all kinds of cowgirls and cowboys on, and the stock show starts the next day on Saturday the 10th. But before we get underway talking about the rodeo and all that other good stuff, I just want to... share with you the latest from London, and that is that the royal family is furious over this inquiry on Diana. Senior members of the British royal family are reportedly furious that a coroner called in Scotland Yard to reinvestigate the death of Princess Diana. Members of the royal family had hoped that the French investigation into the crash deaths of Diana and her boyfriend, Dodi Fayed, would answer all the questions. I can't imagine why they would have thought that. And joining us is my old friend Nicholas Davies, who is one of Diana's biographers, to help us set the record straight and make sense of the latest in these developments. Nicholas, thank you for joining us today.
Enid, it's a pleasure once again, as it always has.
And I feel the same. Nicholas's books include Deadly Affair, The Death of a Tycoon, An Insider's Account of the Rise and Fall of Robert Maxwell, Diana the Lonely Princess, Diana Secrets and Lies, Diana Princess and Her Troubled Marriage. So you have a lot of observations, I should think, to make about Diana. What do you think about what do you make of the latest development?
Well, the very latest, which you will probably be pleased to hear, which has only come out today categorically, is that Diana was not, Enid, repeat, not pregnant.
The tabloids have reported that she was pregnant at the time.
Correct.
So who are you going to believe?
You're going to believe me for one reason. It's not me speaking. It is Dr. John Burton. And Dr. John Burton was the pathologist who examined her in France after the death. And he was there present when the French pathologist examined her for the inquest, and they together examined the womb, and she was not, repeat, not pregnant. Categoric.
All right, let me ask you some questions. First of all, I know that Scotland Yard is involved. If, as you have alleged here on this very program, her death was arranged by British intelligence, or British intelligence had a hand in it, how could Scotland Yard possibly admit that? It would undermine the whole foundation, the whole support for the royal family. It might put the person coming to that conclusion in some personal jeopardy. How could that ever come out in an investigation, even if that were the truth?
It is very, very unlikely that it will come out. What is likely to happen is that this is a smokescreen. By bringing in Scotland Yard and Britain's top cop, I happen to know, called Sir John Stevens, they will be asked to investigate. And what will happen is that they will basically look to France, take the French investigation, and probably in a year to 15 months from now, they will come out and say, we agree with the French. Diana died as a result of excessive speed in a car, involved in a crash, with the car driven by a drunken driver. The fact that those things are basically untrue won't concern them.
All right. So then, when an English subject dies abroad, by law, an investigation into the death must occur. Why is it that there was no inquiry into Diana's death, probably the most prominent British citizen at the time, or among the most prominent, until 6.5 years later?
Well, I mean, this is the way the British work. You know, they use every damn excuse they can to hope that the actual inquest takes place. Hopefully, when all the brouhaha has died down. But in the case of Diana, it's got worse and worse and worse. The reason is officially that they only got all the final reports from France very recently, in fact, in November. Between you and I and all your listeners, that actually, Enid, is not true. They could have done this years ago. They chose not to.
In other words, it was like, wink, wink, take your time. If this report comes in 10 years later, that's fine with us. The longer,
Enid,
the better.
You're right.
Okay. Nicholas Davis is coming to us from London. Again, his books include Deadly Affair, Diana, Secrets and Lies, The Lonely Princess, The Princess and Her Troubled Marriage. He's also written about Prince Philip, who's supposed to have been, Nicholas, you told us on this program, that he was the senior royal liaison to the intelligence services and may have had a hand in the demise of Diana.
It is correct that he would have been informed that she was going to be taken out. He would have done nothing about it.
What do you think is going to happen now? Why are the royals so angry over this inquiry, and why are they so publicly angry? Wouldn't it behoove them to be seen as supportive of the inquiry, since the inquiry is not going to inquire about much and it's not going to come out with anything much new? Why aren't they, as a public relations gesture, wouldn't it work to their benefit to be seen as cooperative here rather than angry?
Absolutely. Of course it would. But, you know, they've got the wrong people advising them, haven't they? I mean, the people advising them really put their toffee nose up in the air and sort of say, how dare people investigate this sort of thing when we haven't decreed that it should occur? I mean, it's stupid, but I'm afraid that's the way old families think they should behave.
All right, now here is when Diana was married to Charles.
Yeah.
Camilla was the third party in that relationship. She was the ghost in that relationship. And now, here is Diana, dead for 6.5 years or so, and she is the ghost in their relationship. She is from the grave, having a hand and not an unpowerful hand in some of the proceedings. I think this is intriguing.
Well, it is intriguing indeed. However, one thing I should say, that it wasn't actually Camilla who began all this. It was Diana's involvement with Hewitt that began all this. I hope you read my latest book, which only came out a couple of months ago, Diana's Secrets and Lies. But you particularly, Enid, because I know you so well, you would really enjoy reading it because it does open the eyes. I mean, I have proof and evidence, let me put it that way, that Diana was seeing Hewitt, her lover, 1 year before the birth of Prince Harry, which he has always denied. And I've got that information from the police records showing him arriving very, very frequently, every week at least, at Kensington Palace. the number of his car and his name written down in the log.
Everybody says that Prince Harry looks a lot like Hewitt. What's your conclusion there?
Well,
absent a DNA test.
No need for a DNA test. I mean, Harry is undeniably Hewitt's child.
You know? How do you know that, Nicholas?
Well,
he looks an awful lot like Hewitt, but still.
Put it this way: it's not DNA. We haven't got DNA. The point is this: why would people totally deny they'd ever met before 1985? When I have traced the record showing that they met very frequently in 1983, a year before Harry's birth.
All right, so if the investigation is really going to conclude that Diana died through a benign series of events that had nothing to do with any intelligence service trying to take her out, why should we believe them when they say she's not pregnant? I mean, I could understand here is the mother of a future King of England, somebody who may be pregnant by a Muslim and with no visible plans to marry him so she could be a single mom. It would be a source of great embarrassment to the crown. So there are a lot of reasons, given that scenario, that they might not want to have her around.
Enid, that is true. But
how can we believe that she was not pregnant?
Well, because the French are also saying it, and they couldn't care a damn about the British royal family. I mean, both the French and the Brits and this coroner, the coroners are very powerful people over here. And if she had been pregnant, he wouldn't have risked his entire reputation saying she wasn't. If somebody was going to come up and say that's rubbish, she was. I mean, I also was.
In other words, the powers that be wouldn't have a chat with the coroner and said, you know, if you play by the rules that we have set here, we can make it worth your while. You will.
Well,
otherwise,
yes, of course,
you're going to risk your career if you do tell the truth.
Enid, yes, except that we've got the French also saying it. They were also pregnant. They couldn't care less what happened or her state, whether she was pregnant or not.
So you're inclined to believe the report, Nicholas, that she was not pregnant.
You know, I have, for many, many years, I have a very inquisitive mind.
I know you do.
On this occasion, I am virtually certain she wasn't pregnant. And it's not from that angle I'm telling you. I'm telling you from her women friends, who were older than she was, who would have known these. These are the people she confided all her love life to.
All right, so they have concurred that she was not pregnant. Okay,
exactly.
So she was not pregnant. We expect that no real truth is going to emerge from this latest investigation.
Well, in Britain at the moment, a figure you should hear about. Yesterday, I was on a TV show in the UK, mm-hmm. all about this,
mm-hmm.
and you know my book that I just told you about. I've outlined precisely how she was murdered. Step by step.
All right, tell us again for people who are just tuning in and haven't heard you talk about it previously.
Right. She was murdered because she had become political dynamite. And she had become political dynamite as a result of her appearance twice only, in Angola and in Bosnia to say that AP mines, that anti-personnel mines, their manufacture must cease. This had been going on, led by Elizabeth Dole since 1985. It had got nowhere. She makes two appearances, and the electors in the United States and the whole of Western Europe demand that their government stop the production of AP mines. It occurred. The point which I've discovered, and which I put in this latest book, is that she planned to become the world ambassador for refugee children. And I have this from the Director General of the Red Cross, International Red Cross. And her new campaign was going to kick off by her visits to a Palestinian refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. Now, at that time, 97, if you recall, President Bill Clinton was pushing through, or trying to push through, a Middle East peace plan. Can you imagine the political uproar that would have occurred with Diana in a Palestinian refugee camp with kids around her saying something must be done? The electors, once again, of the whole of Western Europe in particular, and probably the United States, would have been up in arms supporting her. She had become too dangerous, Enid.
So, therefore, what happened?
What happened is the officers of MI5 arrange this killing and carry
which is,
it out.
Which is the British equivalent of a CIA or intelligence service.
Yes, an intelligence service. Let me just also say that a few years ago after the death, probably about 20% of British people thought it was maybe it had been an intentional killing. Yesterday on this show that I was on, they had a vote, not just in the show, for millions of people. That figure has rocketed, Enid, to 91% of people in Britain now believe she was murdered.
All the more reason for the public relations advice to the royal family that should have been, be supportive of any kind of inquest, appear to be mortified that this is something that people believe in, this is something that you cannot be allowed to stand, and move along those lines rather than to be furious that an inquest is underway.
Enid, of course you're right. I totally agree with you. But if they won't employ people like you and I to advise them, they're going to get the other sort of advisors who are going to tell them a totally different story.
Who are going to tell them what they want to hear. All right. So tell our listeners again. I know you've gone through this once before, but tell them how British military or British intelligence took out Diana.
Right. Well, I'll cut it as short as I can, but basically this is it. The driver, Henri Paul, worked for the French intelligence, point one. And he was told that night to drive through this famous or infamous Alma Tunnel, which was not, repeat, not the direct route to the apartment where they were going that night, go through the Alma Tunnel, to drive as fast as possible, because they were going to cut off the paparazzi, the chasing paparazzi, which numbered about 25 people, mainly fellows, on the motor scooters.
Did intelligence know that Henri Paul, the driver who was being asked to do all this, would also be taken out, or that there was a great likelihood that that would happen?
They'd never tell him that.
They must have certainly known that.
Of course they did. Of course they did. It was just somebody else, wasn't it? I mean, you know, these people do this sort of thing. Charming, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But he had no idea what, of course, was going to happen, nor did the bodyguard. Now, we also come to the very stickly point of the seatbelts. Diana always belted up, always. She had a bodyguard with her sitting in the front seat. He belted up when this driver began going in speeds over 100 miles an hour. Diana had belted up when she set off. It is incomprehensible that she would not have been belted up, traveling at over 100 miles through the center of Paris in the middle of the night. Point two, I state categorically that the pins of her seatbelt and of Dodie's seatbelt had been filed down, which meant she had the seatbelt on, but as a result of any sort of impact, she would just, and Dodie would blast through their seatbelts, and whatever happened would happen. Those are point two. Point three, there was never, never a suggestion, as you know, that Henri Paul, the driver, was drunk until after the event. We saw him even tying his shoelaces. Here we have a 60-year-old man, right, tying his shoelaces, meant to be blind drunk. Absolute nonsense. Diana didn't think he was drunk. No one he talked to that night in the Ritz Hotel.
Well, then where did the information, did the French do some kind of test on his blood to find?
Yes. Afterwards, the test came out. The results came out allegedly of his blood count, which shows.
So if you can't trust the French on the blood count of Henri Paul, how can you trust them on whether or not Diana was pregnant?
Well, Nicholas,
you got to ask that question.
Well, I'll ask you to answer that, because these were people dealing with their own Secret Service. The Secret Service wouldn't need to extend.
All right.
With me.
Gotcha.
The doctors and the.
All right.
Pathology.
So they create a fictional high blood alcohol level for Henri Paul.
So easy. They can go to anywhere and pick it up.
All right. So now they're driving at these excessive speeds through the tunnel. The seatbelts have been tampered with so that they give out in case of impact. In the event of impact.
And
what happens with that Fiat Uno, that white car?
Right, well, that gets even more interesting. It's something I have not before told you. We know there was a crash. What I'm now going to tell you is even more breathtaking. 3 years after this, but remember, of course, that the driver of the UNO could not be found and was never surfaced, and it, allegedly the car was never found.
There was a white UNO, and it flashed some kind of a light, blinding the driver, causing the crash.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Now, jump forward 3 years later. The driver, in fact, of that Fiat UNO was a photographer who was also a freelance member of the Desserter. It's Direction de la Surveillance du Territoire.
So it's the French intelligence service. Okay.
Yeah. Now, his charred body was found in his burnt-out Fiat Uno in the middle of a military training ground 3 years later. Verdict at his inquest was suicide. Now, 2 weeks after that, three masked men, all armed with handguns, break into his office in the center of Paris. They shoot the guard on duty in the foot, go into his office, and steal the following: his computer, all his floppy disks, his cameras, and all his files of photographs, and disappear into the night. And Enid, surprise, surprise, no one has been found who did this crime.
All right, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Why would they have to be, if this was an intelligence operation, why do they have to be masked men in the middle of daylight coming in? They could have surreptitiously broken in at night. It could have been...
No, this was at night.
Oh, this was at night. Okay.
Was at night, yeah. All right. Well, you're quite right. I mean, but, you know, people do stupid things, don't they?
Yeah, but if you're an intelligence service, you're supposed to be intelligent. isn't that sort of like a half qualification for the job?
That,
or are we discussing state intelligence and oxymoron?
Which
moron is in charge?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the way they play the game.
All right, so what's going to happen here with Diana? What's going to happen with this inquest? Nothing much. They're just going to review. The same old is going to come out. The royal family is going to be furious. Will this mean that maybe they'll jump a generation and William what is the impact or the allegations that Prince Charles was somehow behind Diana's death?
Well, that's what, of course, some people are trying to push. I totally disbelieve that. I have no reason to believe that.
I don't believe it. It doesn't ring true.
Listen, let me say this. This ghastly person by the name of Paul Burrell, who allegedly stole 300 gifts which he claimed he had been given, which is absolute rubbish, because no servant is ever given those sort of numbers at all. And also, do remember, this man also, Diana was desperately trying to get rid of for the last 4 months of her life, because she didn't want him poking his nose into her business the whole time.
Why did the Queen, suddenly having an attack of memory, step in at the last minute to get him off the hook? What kind of a deal went down between them?
Do you imagine? I can imagine it. But what I must say, I mean, when it happened at the time, I just said to myself, stupid, stupid, stupid decision. They should have let him swing.
But why do you think the Queen stepped in at the last moment?
Why? Because they were absolutely scared out of their brain of what he might have said. They didn't know what he was going to say. They had no idea. But because no one was believing the royal family or any members of the royal family, because the nation was prepared to believe anything about the wonderful Diana and the way she had been attacked, they didn't know what he was going to say in the court. And so they presumably, and I don't know this, but bought him off to the degree of, you can go and do what you like, and we'll get you off. And he jumped at it.
Wouldn't there have been a caveat, which is keep your mouth shut?
Of course, but he hasn't done so. In the book,
well, he better not go to France and go through that tunnel, because I think this man is dead man walking, is what it sounds like to me. Don't you think, Nicholas? You have a plot now if you want to try your hand at fiction. I think this is a good one.
Yes, quite. I think I'll let him swing on his own.
Well, what's going to happen now? What's your prognostication?
Well, as I said, I mean, it is only a personal prognosis suggesting what's going to happen at the end of this coroner's inquest, but I feel fairly safe by saying that I don't think anything dramatic will occur.
And will it satisfy the English public?
No,
they feel that there has been a whitewash?
No, it will not. No, it will not.
And so it will continue then to undermine the royal family, I would think.
Well, yes, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But you see, they're in an absolute pickle, Enid. There's nothing really they can do.
Isn't this amazing that someone who's dead is causing them so much grief? She caused them a lot of grief when she was alive, and look at from the grave, look what she's doing to them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's unbelievable. But, I mean, you know, she had been a very naughty girl. I mean, you know the book she wrote, you know, Diana, Her True Story, which was allegedly written by Morton.
Right.
It wasn't. It was written by her. I mean, I have to tell you, a pack of lies. A pack of lies.
Really?
Absolutely.
Which were the lies?
Pardon?
What were the lies? Which ones? What were the most salient lies?
Well, you will recall, I'm sure, as many
Well, I'm going to tell you what.
Will.
I want to hear what these lies are. We need to take a break. Can you stay with us for a few moments?
Okay, I'll put off dinner. Yeah, of course.
All right, my guest is Nicholas Davies. He has been a biographer of Diana's. He's also had a distinguished newspaper career. One of his books about Diana's Secret and Lies. Is that Secrets and Lies? Is that your newest book about Diana?
Yeah, that's it. It was out 3 months ago.
All right, A Princess in a Troubled Marriage is another book. The Lonely Princess is another book. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Some people prefer the right wing. Some prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
If you haven't heard the big news about dieting, listen closely. The experts are now saying that low-carb diet plans do work. But if the thought of eating nothing but meat sounds scary to you, continue to listen closely, because the next 30 seconds could change your life. Introducing UltraCarb. UltraCarb is the original carb-blocking, fat-burning supplement guaranteed to help you lose up to 20 pounds in the next month without exhausting workouts or life-changing diets. With UltraCarb, you can continue to eat the foods you love, pasta, pizza, and bread, and still lose weight. After blocking the carbs, UltraCarb works with your body's natural fat-burning mechanism to rid your body of unwanted pounds. Imagine looking in the mirror a month from now and seeing the thinner, happier you. And because UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work, you have nothing to lose except unwanted pounds. Call now to find out how you can receive a one-month supply free with your order.
Call now, 1-800-451-6432. That's 1-800-451-6432. Lose unwanted pounds 100% safe and guaranteed. 1-800-451-6432.
Some people prefer the right wing. Others prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. Our diverse lineup of talk show hosts features more viewpoints and perspectives than any other Denver talk station. Join Greg Dobbs from 6 to 10 a.m. Bill O'Reilly from 10 till noon. Enid Goldstein from noon to 3. Doug Kellett from 3 to 6. Dominic and Bill from 6 to 9 p.m. Lionel from 9 to midnight, followed by Alan Combs. Get your side. Get their side. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
12:32 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. With me from London, Nicholas Davies, who is a biographer of Princess Diana, Diana Princess of Wales, to be precise about it. His newest book, Secrets and Lies, previous books, The Lonely Princess, The Princess and Her Troubled Marriage. He's also written about Prince Philip. And what are some of the other titles? Queen Elizabeth II, A Woman Who Is Not Amused.
Yes.
Which was
good.
A wonderful book. I really like that a lot.
Good.
Diana, the People's Princess. You've written quite a lot about Diana. All right. Tell me what the lies were.
Well, I did know her.
How did you know her, Nicholas?
Through polo.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, remember?
Yeah,
remember.
Now I do remember that.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of her when you knew? Dominic Dunn has written in the new edition of Vanity Fair that he thought she was very intuitive. And she appears to be, because she predicts her own death and pretty much predicts the circumstances, although apparently she had been tipped. But he retails the story of meeting her before O.J. Simpson was acquitted, and she said to him at a time when it looked like O.J. Simpson was going to be found guilty, she
yeah.
said to him, he's going to get off. And he said he didn't, and he disagreed with her, and she said, mark my words, he's going to get off. What was she? Was she that intuitive?
I think that's pushing it, that she was that intuitive, to be fair. I mean, she always thought, she actually thought originally she was going to be shot. And then it changed to car crashes and things. But I don't really think intuitive. I think she was, she used to use lots of various ones to various people. And one or two, of course, would always come off, wouldn't they? Well, that's the way she did it.
So well, but she knew clever. The bottom line was she knew she was going to die early.
Well, she felt she was because she knew. She was the only person, really, who knew what she had done. She was, I mean, she took that husband of hers and destroyed him.
How?
Well, by her actions, by what she said on TV. I mean, to say that, you know, not only is he not fit to be king, but he doesn't think so himself, is the most disgraceful thing to go and say about the father of your children. I mean, she tried to destroy the man.
She did try to undermine him, but
totally.
Was it because? All right, what were some of the lies? Was it because she felt undermined by him and his relationship with Camilla, or was she intent on destroying him from the beginning?
She was. The reason why all this occurred was because she got herself pregnant by Hewitt in 1983, miles before Charles got involved with Camilla, and because of that, she felt totally guilty. And she came to the conclusion very quickly and very brightly, let me say, that what she had to do is dig herself out of this trouble by making herself tremendously popular with the British people. And she changed overnight. I mean, she had, you know the way she was, like, at the time of her wedding and before.
She was a little shrinking violet.
Absolutely.
A tall but shrinking violet.
Absolutely.
Who cleaned out the toilets of her friends' apartments to earn a few extra pounds.
Correct. So you know what she was like before. And she changed. And what changed her was her love affair.
Why didn't she just have an abortion? I mean, why did anybody even have to know about it?
Well, she knew even nothing about contraception. She knew nothing about these things. She was a virgin. I mean, I used to chat to her at those times, and she was, you felt like putting your arm around her and saying, come on, you know, chin up.
Well,
I mean, because
it was more than the chin that was up in that moment.
You naughty girl.
I am naughty. All right, what were some of the lies that she told Andrew Morton that appeared in the book that further undermined Charles?
Right. You remember what really staggered people about that book that she wrote was the fact of her attempting suicide.
Right.
What I have done in my new book, I've gone through every one of those to tell you exactly what happened. And I will just give you, your listeners, just a few. She said, when she was 3 months pregnant with William, she was so distraught, so unhappy, she hurled herself down a flight of stairs at Balmoral. And it was only by good fortune she saved her own life and that of her unborn child. No one stopped to think, hold on a minute, Diana trying to kill her unborn child and herself. Now, what actually happened was this. It was a flight of stairs. It was three steps. She happened to slip on the last step. She went down very gently onto her hands and knees, got up straight away, told everyone, I'm absolutely fine. No, I don't want a doctor. No, I don't want to see anyone. No, I don't want to go lie down. Nothing. She changed what really happened.
How did you find out that story? From servants?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That's point one. Point two, she then said that she tried to suicide, A, by running into a cabinet. No one has a chest of drawers, I'm sorry, which no one had ever heard of as a way of trying to suicide. Then she said she had tried to suicide with a lemon squeezer, and people wondered how on earth she could have done that. And then another attempt at suicide was when she said she had stabbed herself all over her body, in her chest and her legs and her arms, in front of Charles, right, with a sharp knife. Mm-hmm. There was not a single mark on her body.
How did you know that?
Because I saw her weeks later in a swimming suit. I mean, it's just, I mean, they were lies.
Oh, Nicholas, you're so wicked here. No, our sympathies were always with Diana. Now I have to rethink this.
Absolutely. I know that people will have to. But everything I've ever written.
Why hasn't the royal family, they're willing to take her out? Why hasn't the royal family made any of this available?
Because they're crazy. I mean, they should have got hold of someone like me and said, hey, do this. But I'm very pleased they didn't, because I found it out myself. And I haven't been told this. I've been told this by other people, but not by members of the royal family. I have people who are right in there.
Who is your publisher on the new book?
In the United States.
Yeah.
They won't bring it out over here. They're frightened. AMI Books.
AMI Books. All
you
right.
Can buy it off, you can get it off Amazon is the best.
All right, so AMI Books.
We'll and it only costs about $5.
Six, actually. We'll get we'll get a copy from your publisher. I am delighted that you could join us today. As always, a pleasure. So, parting words. What's going to happen? The investigation continues.
Yeah,
nothing much is going to come out of it.
15 months, remember.
15 months. That's when we're going to find out that nothing new has happened.
So at least I'll talk to you again in 15 months, if not before.
I'm sure you're going to talk to me before. Nicholas Davies, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, anything you want to tell me about Venice? I have a trip planned.
Great, but take care and look after Colorado.
I will. All right.
Venice, fantastic. Have you not been there before?
Never, never.
It is absolutely fantastic. You must take a lover with you, or I don't know.
Well, maybe I can rent one.
You must take a lover with you. It is fantastic.
Really? I'm going to have
it. It is so romantic. And you must go. Oh God, I've forgotten the name of it. There's a magnificent hotel there, and I've forgotten the damn name of it. Where you lie in the magnificent double bed, and you're looking up to a beautiful painted ceiling from the 16th century.
The thing is, those hotels, you can rent a room, but you can't rent a groom. That's a problem, Nicholas. Listen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay.
I really appreciate it. Nicholas Davies, Diana, Princess of Wales biographer, his latest book, Secrets and Lies. Thank you, Nicholas, and a happy new year to you.
That's very kind of you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. 12:40, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Cloudy, 45 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the 17 John Elway Automotive Showrooms. Denver police have arrested a 23-year-old man in connection with the shooting of a police officer this morning. Officer Kevin Kreitzer had stopped a speeding motorist who allegedly shot the officer in the arm. Officer Kreitzer was taken to Denver Medical Center. He's expected to be released this afternoon. Colorado's 2004 legislative session has gotten underway. Legislators will be fighting over economic issues such as Tabor and Amendment 23. Governor Bill Owens will make his State of the State address tomorrow. Two felony counts have been recommended for the owner of three pit bulldogs that attacked and killed a woman in November. The Elbert County Sheriff's Office has recommended that Jacqueline McEwen should be charged with criminally negligent homicide and violation of the state's dangerous dog law. In sports, the Denver Nuggets host the L.A. Lakers tonight at the Pepsi Center. Lakers beat the Nuggets when the two teams last played in December. John Elway's year-end celebration has special holiday prices on over 7,000 new and used vehicles with no payments for 3 months. Check the paper's John Elway Buyer's Guide and head to an Elway showroom near you. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:42.
Frankly, it's difficult to imagine that a breed of men as fierce and warlike as the Scots ever learned to embrace the niceties of a civilized life, much less advance them. I mean, there they were, traipsing around the wee glen in nothing but their bagpipes. And next thing you know, they've invented distilled liquor. Now it's Sean Connery, the Highland Games. Why, they're even making stained glass, right here in Colorado. Beautiful stained glass. Extraordinary, really, that everyone can appreciate. Even men like myself. Real men, who don't feel the need to toss around telephone poles in a pathetic attempt to compensate for the notion that their forefathers wore skirts.
English swine. Did you not see Braveheart? Hi, this is Martin Faith, the owner of Scottish Stained Glass. If you want to make a unique statement in your home, think leaded glass. It's private, beautiful to look at, and surprisingly affordable, with prices starting at just $145, including insulation. For a free in-home consultation, call us at 303-766-3811. 303-766-3811.
KNRC News Time is 12:43. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Albertsons. Getting a report of an accident on I-70 right at 270. Watch for that. Also trying to clear an accident on I-76 and Sheridan, as well as an injury accident, 70th and Washington. Let Albertsons help you trim up in 2004 with Lean Cuisine, now 50% off in boneless, skinless chicken breaths, only $1.88 a pound through January 13th. Albertsons, helping make your life easier. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Aaron Williams with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We'll see mostly cloudy skies for today, but temperatures much warmer than yesterday. High of 41 degrees. For tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, low of 22. Pretty nice day shaping up for Thursday. We'll see plenty of sunshine with a high of 46. And speaking of nice, how about Friday? Plenty of sunshine warming up all the way to a high of 51. For the Weather Channel, I'm Aaron Williams on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's cloudy, 45 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1244. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Tonight on Court TV, an all-new, all-real Forensic Files. A suspicious message.
Why did Kathleen write it down?
And the words of a 9-year-old girl.
She told me my daddy did.
Are all investigators have to crack the case of a romance turned tragic.
And he told her, you're going to end up on the cold slab.
Can detectives win this high-stakes game of forensic psychology? Find out on Forensic Files tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific, only on Court TV, the Investigation Channel.
Hon?
Yeah?
Can you keep the kids busy? I'm doing our taxes.
Oh, that's right. We're using TurboTax software this year.
Yeah, and it's so easy. TurboTax asks simple questions like an accountant would, and it automatically fills in all the right forms.
Really?
Mm-hmm. TurboTax also checks for errors, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Wow. What about deductions?
Oh, it found ones I didn't even think of.
Like those little tax deductions jumping on the sofa?
Hmm?
The kids.
No, I remembered them.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy. Taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC Market Watch.
We're a little nervous ahead of earnings season. That's how one trader at Deutsche Bank explains today's selling on Wall Street. Blue Chip Alcoa kicks off the earnings parade tomorrow. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is slipping 45. The Nasdaq gaining 8. The S&P 500 is losing 2. Heavy volume, 1.1 billion shares traded at the New York Stock Exchange so far, 1.5 billion over at the Nasdaq. Coach says holiday sales jumped almost 14% in the U.S. and the luxury retailer's flagship store in Japan also rang up double-digit gains, but Coach is slipping a half dollar today. Some investors think the stock's $38 value is too pricey. Nortel Networks is advancing almost 19%. Merrill Lynch has slapped a buy rating on the stock, pushing Nortel to its best level in a year. And five blue chips on the Dow are touching their highs for the year. Citigroup, Disney, GM, Honeywell, and International Paper. John Wardock from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1246 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock. And again, we are going to be live from the Press Club this coming Friday. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about cowboy hats later in the broadcast. Oh, there's a significant show. There's a weighty topic. But you know what? There's a whole etiquette of cowboy hats. Cowboy hats can tell you a lot. I want to find out the hidden messages in cowboy hats. But live from the Press Club on Friday, in order to celebrate the whole theme of the show, it was going to be the Internet, and we decided to delay that. But the whole theme of the show is going to be the stock show that begins on January 10th, the next day. So the National Western Stock Show, Rodeo and Horse Show at the National Western Complex. Next week, we're going to be joined by Dr. Dean Adell, who's an old friend of mine from San Francisco. And you've heard him on radio all over the country and watched him on TV all over the country. And he has a new book out called Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Healthiness. And I'm intrigued because everything you pick up now as we begin the new year, or the new year is underway, talks about how you can shape up, how you can get yourself healthy, how you can lose weight, and all the other things that we are thinking about. And I'm thinking about, since we've just been talking about Diana, Princess Di, here's another American princess that seems to be in a lot of trouble, and her loved ones are really concerned about her. And this is Britney Spears. Loved ones, colleagues are worried about Pop-Tart. Britney Spears questioning why the singer's behavior has gotten wackier throughout the year. And you want to know how wacky? She got married at 5 o'clock in the morning, and a former Denver gossipist broke the story, Norm Clark, in Las Vegas, and then was annulled, about a day later, a couple of hours later. By Monday, it was annulled. 55 hours later. The last straw was her quickie marriage last weekend, which ended in an annulment just 55 hours later. Well, you can imagine. I mean, there's no prenup. She's worth zillions. She married a kid who was somebody she met in kindergarten, a childhood friend. You can't, when you're in a position, when you're in Britney Spears' position, you cannot get married like that in 2 seconds flat while her reps And those close to her say she doesn't drink to excess. Eyewitnesses have reported that she got sick on three separate occasions since Thanksgiving and got so drunk on New Year's Eve she had to be escorted out of a nightclub. A fellow celeb musician who asked to remain anonymous says he's concerned about the star's hard parting ways. Whether it was drinks, romance, or giggles that caused Spears to marry her childhood friend, reality soon came crashing down on the singer. Her music manager hours later explained the effects the marriage would have on her career and finances. The singer saw the light and agreed to have the marriage annulled. Is she kidding? I mean, he gets half of what it's community property. Whoa, I think, I don't know about Nevada, but definitely California. But hours before, Spears seemed to be in the wedding spirit, nestling up against Alexander's chest and looking happy when the reverend and his drive-in wedding chapel put the finishing touches on the ceremony. Isn't this amazing? She walked down the aisle to the wedding march wearing a white garter over her ripped jeans during a 20-minute ceremony. An eyewitness said that Spears was not only sober but delighted at the little white wedding chapel, even shedding tears of joy. Some pals think she's running wild. Well, success can have that effect. Here's the Borowitz report. Brittany Bar Mitzvah, Pop-Tart becomes Jewish, and a man. In a Vegas quickie, singing sensation Britney Spears was bar mitzvahed last night in what was described as a quickie bar mitzvah in Las Vegas, her representative confirmed. The suddenly Jewish Pop-Tart was bar mitzvahed by Rabbi Elvis Perlstein, a Rabbi Elvis impersonator who performs bar mitzvahs in an open all-night synagogue on the Las Vegas Strip. According to those who witnessed the four-minute ceremony, the saucy songstress avoided the traditional religious rituals and instead warbled an altered version of her hit song, I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman. With Rabbi Perlstein looking on, the platinum-selling recording artist reportedly saying, I'm not a girl, not yet a woman, but today I am a man. While some fans expressed astonishment at the news of Miss Spears' bar mitzvah, others took it in stride, sending the pop star savings bonds and gold pen and pencil set. But hours later, Miss Spears stunned the world once more by revealing that she had her bar mitzvah abruptly, like unbar mitzvahed. In explaining her decision, Spears told reporter that she only got in bar mitzvahed as a way of one-upping rival Christina Aguilera, who had gotten a license to operate heavy farm machinery the night before in a quickie Vegas ceremony. Once I started getting all those pen and pencil sets, I started feeling really guilty about the whole thing, Britney Spears said. On the question of her current religious status, Rabbi Perlstein, who is the Elvis impersonator, said the fact that Britney says she's feeling guilty means that she's still Jewish. 303-382-1150. Stavros on a cell. Hi, Stavros. You're live with Enid.
Enid, I was shooting pool last night.
You have not called up to grind my valves in quite a long time, Stavros.
That's true, but I had to check this rumor out. They say that you're the other woman in James Carville Magdalene marriage, and that he's picking up the tab for your trip to Venice. Any truth to that?
I can't comment, Stavros.
Okay, well, I can understand, particularly on the air. But one other thing, and I'm in a hurry here, you forgot to blame Bush for the earthquake in Iran.
Well, I think that's one of the things that he didn't have anything to do with. One of the very few things he might not have had anything to do with, unless he was jumping up and down on his bed in the White House and it had reverberations, Stavros. Don't ever count that one out.
No, that could happen.
That could have happened.
Laura's a pretty fine number, you know.
Laura is a lovely woman, and in today's Washington Post, it's funny that you should bring it up, is an assessment of those two girls from a biographer. The biographer of Laura Bush is a Washington Post reporter who is a huge fan of Laura Bush's. So this is a very favorable, very loving tribute to Laura Bush, except for the chapter on those two girls, the twins. And apparently it will rip your eyeballs out, Stavros.
Well, I'm interested in that. Are you going to interview that lady?
Well, I'm going to try and interview that lady, and I'm going to try and reference and share with you some of the information about those two daughters.
Yeah.
One who got busted four times, I think, in a month for underage drinking. You know which one I mean.
Well, of course. I mean, it's sort of shades of when you were going through college.
Well, I don't think so. Let me just add to this, Stavros. When they were 3 years old, they got on Air Force One and they kept throwing toilet paper down the toilet and stuffed it all up. And you know who had to fish it all out?
Barbara Bush.
That's the Silver Fox. That's how she turned silver, fishing out that toilet paper from Air Force One.
But look how they've grown since. At least they're not bad to look at.
No, but I, you know.
Okay.
You got to keep listening, Stavros. The truth is going to emerge here shortly.
Okay, now I want to find out about that trip to Venice. I'm going to start investigating that.
Yeah, you better. You better call James Carville and track his American Express card.
All right.
Thank you. Happy New Year. 303-322-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition, the Wednesday and semi-serious edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Greg Dobbs, named best radio talk show host by Westword, AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Larry King, and I'm here with some news your heart's gonna love. We all know a few things that taste good aren't exactly good for your heart, but Welch's 100% grape juice, made from Welch's own Concord grapes, not only tastes great, but it's fat-free, cholesterol-free, and certified by the American Heart Association. What's more, Welch's purple grape juice is loaded with natural antioxidant power, and growing evidence suggests that diets rich in antioxidants may reduce the risk of heart disease. So, drink up. Your heart and your taste buds will thank you.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
The Arvada Center for the Arts and Humanities presents the 14th Annual Cowboy Poetry Gathering, January 9th through the 12th. This four-day event features a lineup of 38 cowboys and ranchers from 14 states who will capture the spirit and lifestyle of the West through poetry, song, and verse. For hours, information, and to purchase tickets, visit the Arvada Center's website at www.arvadacenter.com or call 720-898-7200.
RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving, says don't take your lifestyle on the road. Designate before you celebrate. Learn more at rad.org.
AM 1150, KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
12:56 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. We're going to be talking about some serious stuff. But the joke on the Borowitz report on Britney Spears being bar mitzvahed becomes Jewish and a man in a Vegas quickie is that to be bar mitzvahed, you have to be a boy, not a girl. If you're a girl, you're bat mitzvahed. So that's the joke. Okay. Just thought I would clear that up. Well, I'm going to share as we go along, and there's not enough time in this hour, but in the next hour, this is a new biography of Laura Bush. And Laura Bush is somebody I rather like. I think she's smart, and I have a feeling that maybe she's the one who wears the pants in the family, but I don't know that for sure. But certainly she's had a taming effect on her husband. She was a librarian. I appreciate the fact that she reads, and she says she's a fan of serious literature. She seems bright, but the children, her two girls, are another story entirely. And what is has been described as an otherwise, I won't say fawning biography, but a very supportive and positive look at Laura Bush by Washington Post staff writer Ann Gerhart has a chapter in there about the two girls that is so revealing and so scathing that you have to wonder who George and Laura are as people to have raised their girls this way. Think back to Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton. Think back to what a good kid Chelsea was and how people made fun of her because she looked really awkward, and especially when she was a preteen or her early teen years, she was very awkward looking, like kids are at that age. And people like Rush Limbaugh, a junkie, an addict, were holding up pictures of her and saying, "And which is the White House dog?" Remember all those nasty things? I mean, she was just a kid. And she had no real control over the way she looked. Not really. And they made fun of her. But she was a perfect kid. Her grades were good. She got into good schools. She never disgraced her parents in any way, shape, or form. She never was caught drinking, underage drinking. Can you imagine what the Clinton haters would have done with that if she had been anything but a really good kid? And even people who hated the Clintons had to agree that they must have done something right. They must have been good parents in some way, because Chelsea seemed to be a good kid. She got good grades. She behaved herself. She went to a good school. She went on to Oxford. Later, after the parents were out of office, there were tabloid reports that she was drinking and necking in public and this and that and the other. But other than that, really not much about Chelsea Clinton. But these two girls really seem to be very embarrassed about their parents. Can you believe that? I know a lot of teenagers are embarrassed about their parents, but when your parent, when your dad is the president of the United States, even if he is, even if his name is George W. Dickey Bush, still and all, your dad's the president. And they are embarrassed by their parents? Isn't that strike you as odd? And what does that say about George and Laura? Or is it, those of you who are parents, is it really just a crapshoot? You can be the best parents in the world and you can still have horrible kids? Is that a possibility? I don't think so. I really think there's some kind of a correlation. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but we will discuss it as we continue on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. You can join the conversation, and in doing so, you will talk to more people probably than you will meet in the whole rest of your life. It's easy to do it, virtually free. We'd love to hear new voices. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein, and this is
KNRC 1150.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Inglewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon, cloudy, 47 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Albertsons. Denver police have arrested 23-year-old Robert Zamora in connection with the shooting of a Denver police officer early this morning. Denver Police Detective Teresa Garcia says Officer Kevin Kreitzer was working radar patrol when he pulled over a white Mustang for speeding. When the suspect refused to show his hands out the window, Kreitzer asked him to step out of the car.
The suspect refused to show the officer his hands. At that point, the suspect exited his vehicle and started shooting at the officer, hitting the officer once in the left arm. The suspect takes off running on foot, leaving his car behind, as well as a 2-year-old little boy in the vehicle.
Kreitzer fired back at suspect Robert Zamora, but missed. The child was picked up by his grandfather, but investigators don't know the relationship between Zamora and the child. Following an intense hour-and-a-half manhunt, police were tipped off to Zamora's location by a resident who the suspect had asked for a ride out of the neighborhood. Police found Zamora and a gun hiding behind a house just blocks from where the shooting happened. Garcia says at the time of the traffic stop, Zamora only had 2 minor warrants, but that he does have a lengthy criminal history, including 5 arrests on various charges over the past year. Kreitzer was released from Denver Medical Health Center in good condition around noon. The Colorado legislature has kicked off its 2004 session. Republican Senator Ron Tech from the Western Slope says the conciliatory tone being set today is to be expected.
You know, the first day we always make nice to each other, and we'll see what happens the next day. I truly hope that we have a better attitude in working together.
The legislature will be taking up a number of economic issues, including Tabor and Amendment 23. Governor Bill Owens set to make his State of the State address tomorrow morning at 11. Fewer people died on Colorado roads in 2003 than in 2002. Traffic accident deaths dropped 18% compared to the year before. There were a total of 609 traffic-related deaths last year, while there were 742 in 2002. Authorities say there's still work to do to drop those numbers even further. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office got a little more than they bargained for during the recent The Heat Is On campaign against drunk driving. Besides arresting 30 people for DUI, Boulder County deputies charged 7 people with possession of a controlled substance and confiscated 113 grams of cocaine plus some meth and marijuana. Deputies also brought in an assault rifle, a shotgun, a handgun, and several illegal knives. The DUI arrests were accompanied by a number of additional charges. One of the arrests led to the department being able to identify an alleged theft ring involved in several burglaries. President Bush has put forth sweeping immigration reform proposals that he says will make the U.S. a more compassionate, humane, and stronger country. Noting that the U.S. is a nation of immigrants, Bush told a White House ceremony that America is a welcoming society. The president's proposals are designed to make it easier for immigrants to legally work in the USA. Millions of illegal immigrants would be granted temporary legal status if they can prove they have jobs. Bush said the reforms will also help make the nation's borders more secure. Earlier, White House spokesman Scott McClellan said the new plan is definitely not blanket amnesty. Critics accuse the president of pandering to Hispanics in an election year. The hunt is on for an Afghan suspect, believed to have ties to Al-Qaeda, who didn't show up Christmas Eve for an Air France flight to Los Angeles. He's being targeted as the passenger behind a slew of delays and cancellations of international flights to the U.S. One lawmaker says the man is suspected of having a small bomb with components that might get past airport security. The U.S. government took extraordinary precautions in the face of a possible dirty bomb attack over the New Year's holiday. The Washington Post is reporting that teams of nuclear scientists who were secretly dispatched to five U.S. cities failed to find traces of such a device. Dirty bombs are capable of spreading radioactive material over a broad area. On Wall Street, stocks are mixed. The Dow down almost 44 points. NASDAQ up just over 11. The S&P 500 down just under 3. In sports, the Denver Nuggets play host to the L.A. Lakers tonight. This will mark the first time that Kobe Bryant has played basketball in Colorado since he was charged with sexually assaulting an Eagle County hotel worker last summer. Colorado Avalanche walloped the Columbus Blue Jackets 6-0 last night. Avs goalie David Abishur says he was happy with his performance.
I made a lot of tough saves, I think, especially late in the third. And then if it's 6-0, it's a little bit easier. But I thought I played well. Put it up there to some of my good games, for sure.
The Avs head to Nashville tomorrow night to play the Predators. Let Albertsons help you trim up in 2004 with Lean Cuisine, now 50% off, and boneless, skinless chicken breasts, only $1.88 a pound through January 13th. Albertsons, helping make your life easier. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
This week on Colorado State of Mind, host Greg Dobbs and a panel of Coloradans debate and discuss the hot topics of the new year. The Emmy Award-winning program is the only show that brings you real people discussing real issues that matter to you. Colorado State of Mind, Friday nights at 8:30, only on Rocky Mountain PBS. Colorado State of Mind is part of Rocky Mountain PBS's stellar Friday night public affairs lineup. The evening kicks off at 6 with the most trusted newscast on television, the News Hour with Jim Lehrer. Stay tuned to Washington Week at 7, followed by Wall Street Week with Fortune at 7:30 and the McLaughlin Group at 8. Following Colorado State of Mind at 8:30, stay with Rocky Mountain PBS for Now with Bill Moyers. Cap off your week with the most comprehensive news, social commentary, and financial information available. Tune in for Colorado State of Mind and the entire public affairs lineup every Friday night only on Rocky Mountain PBS Channel 6. Log on to rmpbs.org anytime to join the discussion or learn more.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by AutoZone, and really a pretty good drive. We were trying to clean up a couple problems on the highway. I-70 at 270, we had an accident, as well as I-76 at Sheridan. Still trying to work an injury accident, 70th and Washington. Time for an oil change. Buy 6 quarts of Valvoline Max Life Motor Oil at AutoZone and get a bottle of Max Life Fuel System Cleaner for free at mail-in rebate. See store for details. Get in the zone. AutoZone. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We can finally sigh a little breath of relief here with some milder air working across the Denver area with a mostly cloudy sky topping out in the mid-40s today. Overnight lows tonight right around 20. It'll be mostly sunny and in the 40s again on Thursday and then in the mid-40s to mid-50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's cloudy, 45 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And settle in, because I have a story to tell you. I want to share it with you. This is the scathing chapter about the Bush children that is running in today's Washington Post. The author is Ann Gerhart. She's a Washington Post staff writer. She has written a book called The Perfect Wife, The Life and Choices of Laura Bush. It was just published by Simon & Schuster. And yes, Eric, who emails me, she does mention Laura's manslaughter charge. Laura herself, Mrs. Bush, has a dark secret, not so secret really anymore. The Tabs broke the story a long time ago, but when she was 17 years old, she blew a stop sign and creamed a car. It was her friend, and it has been reported her boyfriend, that was killed as a result of her blowing the stop sign. And Ann Gerhart, who has been a big fan of Laura Bush's, and while Laura Bush apparently didn't sit for an interview for this biography, the Ann Gerhart, the author, did have good access to many of her friends, and so they were willing to talk. So in some ways, this is sort of an authorized biography, maybe not completely so. But she doesn't stint in her details about that part of Laura Bush's life. Apparently, when she went back to look at the records, the investigation wasn't really the best. And Laura Bush has had to live with that, and what effect it has had on her, it's hard to say. I couldn't even begin to speculate. But in what has been an otherwise positive biography, reported to be an otherwise positive biography of Laura Bush, comes what has been described as a scathing chapter on their twins, on their children. So sit down, buckle up your seatbelt if you're in your car, be sure you do that, relax, and listen to this because it is juicy. It starts out this way. The armored black limousine glides to a stop near a U.S. military jet at Andrews Air Force Base early one morning in May 2002. Laura Bush is about to embark on her first solo trip as First Lady, a 10-day visit to three European nations where she will speak out for Afghan women's rights. An aide opens the door, and Mrs. Bush slides her legs carefully out and steps onto the tarmac. By this point, she knows her part well. Pause to smile, wave, and let the photographers dutifully record the image. The small press corps knows its part, too, and watches the routine pre-flight maneuver with no expectations. Suddenly, one leg, in worn corduroy, then the other, swings off the smooth leather limo seat. Jenna Bush stands up to follow her mother onto the plane for the spring fling, and the reporters go on alert. It's the rowdy twin, the one who's been busted twice in 4 weeks for underage drinking, who has run her Secret Service detail ragged, who was captured in the National Enquirer falling down a cigarette in her hand. The corduroy jeans are ratty at their too long hems where Jenna has ground them into the pavement too many times. She's wearing a short black T-shirt, and her exposed tummy pooches out over the low-riding waistband. Flip-flops are on her feet. Her blonde hair has been pinned carelessly up with a plastic clip. Sunglasses cover her eyes. Hoisting a backpack, she clomps up the plane stairs and disappears. She hardly looks appropriately presidential daughterly, but then again, she has time to get herself together before the entourage lands in Paris, where French and American officials will greet Mrs. Bush and hand her flowers. The girl is hardly flying coach. Her mother has a hairdresser and a makeup artist on board the military plane, and there's a lovely wide bed and full shower. But upon arrival, 7.5 hours later, while her ladylike mother smiles and embraces the waiting welcomers, Jenna appears at the plane door, looking exactly the same. The flip-flops still on her feet, the belly still exposed, the hair still not brushed. Suddenly, she darts back inside. The twin has spied the telephoto lenses of several French photographers far away behind a fence. For a few moments, nothing happens, and then the limousine trunk floats open by electronic remote. A White House valet retrieves one of Mrs. Bush's Neiman Marcus garment bags carefully laid out in the trunk, and he carries it back up the plane steps. The reporters watch in wonder. While he holds it aloft, Jenna slips behind it, and he walks back down the stairs, shielding the first daughter from the prying eyes of all media, foreign and domestic. Only the top of her blonde head bobbing up and down, and those flip-flops are visible. Jenna is hiding, literally, behind her mother's skirts. There are only two possible explanations for what the reporters have just witnessed. Either A, Laura Bush has asked her 20-year-old to please make herself more presentable, more fitting as a representative of the United States, using taxpayer dollars on an official visit, and her daughter has adamantly refused, or B, Laura hasn't even bothered to ask. There is plenty that the Bushes don't ask their daughters to do. That much is clear. They are college seniors, now 22, Jenna, an English major at the University of Texas in Austin, and Barbara, like her father, a Yalie, majoring in humanities. Both are considering graduate school, their parents say, but not before working first, perhaps as teachers. Jenna and Barbara have not campaigned or reined in their adolescent rebellions. They have not appeared engaged in any of the pressing issues their generation will inherit, nor shown empathy for the struggles facing their mother and their father, the President of the United States. They have not treated with respect their Secret Service details, those highly trained men and women who literally would take a bullet for them. They don't show their faces at the White House often. So far, they have shown little inclination to embrace a life of public service modeled by their parents, uncle, and grandparents. They are girls born rich, blessed with intelligence, good looks, trust funds, loving parents, boundless opportunities, freedom from many of life's daily vexing challenges. Yet, they persist in seeing themselves as victims of daddy's job. In this attitude, they have been subtly encouraged by their mother, Laura Bush, would never permit herself to feel victimized by her husband's decisions. She regards herself as a full partner who embraced his ambitions because she wanted for him what he wanted for himself. His happiness has been as important to her as her own or greater. No, any victimization she might have felt has all been transferred onto her girls. Once George sought political office when his girls were 12, Laura's guiding principle in mothering became, quote, "They didn't really ask for this," end quote, as if the life that followed for Jenna and Barbara was some disastrous, bumpy detour from the normal smooth path toward adulthood. "They just want to do like every other teenager does," the first lady has insisted often. This declaration is dead opposite from most parents' insistence, which is, of course, "I don't care what other kids do. You are not other kids." I don't know about you, but I heard that litany from my mother very often, plenty. Laura Bush left her career as teacher and librarian at 31. By the time the twins were born in 1981, Laura was 35. The couple hadn't been sure they would ever be able to have children of their own, and then Laura nearly lost the babies late in her pregnancy. So she and George felt doubly blessed. Their gratitude was so deep and persistent that over time it seems to have turned into indulgence. In many ways, the Bush twins were excellent candidates to make a good transition to life as children of a political figure. It was a family business, after all, and the twins' parents entered it only after they had addressed their concerns about what it would mean for family life. "She was the last one to sign on, the most reluctant," the president said of Laura. "Our girls were so little," she said, "but the timing was good. After their father became governor, Jen and Barbara were able to go to high school in the relatively laid-back town of Austin, Texas. By the time their parents landed in the White House, they were away at college." When the Bushes first moved from Dallas into the governor's mansion, Barbara and Jenna went to the private St. Andrew's Episcopal School and later the public Austin High, and their mother worked hard to integrate her life as a mom with her duties as first lady. Even as the couple traveled around the state, Laura insisted that at least she or George be home by 4 in the afternoon to help with homework. The four of them ate dinner together most nights. "You'd see them at back-to-school night, just like all the other parents sitting at the student desks in the classroom," said an Austinite whose kids were friends with the Bush girls. "It was no big deal. They were just part of the parent population. There was plenty of staff and few chores. Texas Department of Public Safety troopers chauffeured the girls to and from school." Laura recognized that she had been deprived of an excellent way to gather teenage intelligence. "Being relieved of driving," she said, "is actually a wonderful luxury for someone who drove 20 carpools a week in Dallas. But at the same time, you learn a lot about your kids when you have them captive in a car." In interviews during the gubernatorial years, both Bushes referred again and again to how embarrassing their children found them. Always, they seemed to think that that was perfectly normal behavior for teenagers. I'm going to ask you, is it? I mean, I know some teenagers feel that way about their parents. But when your father's at that time the governor and then later the president, every time he went to one of Jenna's volleyball games, the opposing team would ask for an autograph and picture of George. Jenna and Barbara's reaction, of course, was total humiliation, George said. Laura seemed resigned to being an object of ridicule for her girls. They made fun of her clothes, her shoes, her hair. "Mom," they would tell her, "your hair is so stiff, it could stay put in a hurricane." Rarely were the girls asked to come downstairs and say hello to dinner guests. "We've been very careful not to make them go to things or be in the limelight," Laura explained. "At this age, they don't even like to admit they have parents." Later, during the presidential campaign, Laura would return to this theme again. The twins were proud of their father, she said, and they want him, of course, to do whatever he wants to do. But at the same time, they want the privacy that I think every senior in high school wants. You know, most seniors in high school don't want to even admit they have parents, much less a parent who's a governor or presidential candidate. Partly out of respect for their privacy, mostly out of sensitivity toward their distaste for their dad's high profile, Laura also asked photographers not to take the twins' picture. Requests for a family portrait to illustrate a magazine or newspaper story were routinely denied. "The girls would be totally humiliated having to do a photo," said Laura. When, at 16, the girls demanded separate cars, their mother assented and their father disagreed. "You can share one car," he said, "and learn to work together." It was one of his rare victories in an attempt to impose some limitations. As the family began to discuss whether George should run for president, the girls were adamant in their opposition. Both would be in college before the election. They would never have to live in the White House or attend school in Washington as Chelsea Clinton had done from the age of 12. But that calculation didn't move them. To Jenna and Barbara, it was clear that their emancipation from the strictures of living at home would coincide exactly with the arrival of a Secret Service detail to their college dorms. The Bushes were heartened by the way the media had been protective of Bill and Hillary Clinton's only child. We felt like the press had given Chelsea the opportunity to have privacy, to have a private life, Laura said, and they determined that they would not burden their girls with heavy expectations about their role as Bushes. The only lesson they wanted to impart to their children, Bush said during the presidential campaign, was, quote, that I love you. I love you more than anything. And therefore, you should feel free to fail or succeed, and you can be anything you want in America. When Inauguration Day arrived, Jenna and Barbara dressed to be noticed in trendy, expensive outfits by Texas-born designer Lila Rose and sexy stiletto knee-high Jimmy Choo boots. When the moment came for the actual swearing-in, the 19-year-old girls fidgeted toward the edge of their chair. Now, if your dad were being sworn in as president, would you be fidgeting at the edge of your chair, looking down at your feet? I would be sitting on the edge of my chair. I'd be so proud of my dad. I'd be so curious to know what happens next. They were fidgeting, sitting at the edge of their chairs. They stood up, unsure how to behave. It fell to President Clinton, who gave each of them a gentle nudge toward their parents, and still they stood there, shoulders slumped, looking at their toes. Finally, their grandmother, Barbara, seated behind them, had seen enough. In one swift, practiced gesture, she reached forward to her granddaughters, first one, then the other. She put her thumbs between their shoulder blades and used her fingers to pull their shoulders up and back. The message was clear. Stand up straight. Remember who you are. We are Bushes, and Bushes stand up straight. The mainstream press honored the administration's request to not pry into the girls' lives. Their respective campus newspapers primly refused to cover them, but the tabs had become intrigued. Jenna and Barbara, people quickly surmised, were not like the preceding first daughter. During her years in the White House, rather than fleeing political life, Chelsea had seized it. She called her father's secretary and asked for a ticket to a State of the Union address. When her mother embarked on a tour of the most disadvantaged spots in India and Africa, Chelsea wanted to go along. Chelsea went to parties and drank and had boyfriends just like many other teenagers, which is what Jenna and Barbara craved. But Chelsea had a gift for keeping her mishaps out of the public eye. She cultivated her protection and support of other adults in the White House, and she treated her Secret Service agents with respect. Accordingly, they were more inclined to protect her when she got herself in jams. The twins, meanwhile, seemed to have decided that their Secret Service agents were their enemies and their chauffeurs, bellhops and valets, or valets. It took only a month after their dad became president for Jenna to land in the headlines with news that she'd used her Secret Service detail to spring a male friend from a Texas jail after he was arrested for public intoxication. The White House refused to comment about the incident, and so did the Secret Service when a spokesman was asked about the propriety of using agents to spring drunk kids from the county clink. It was the first of many conundrums that the Bushes would face as their daughters traversed their last years of being underage. Should they reveal the particulars of an incident to prove that nothing improper had happened, or should they maintain a no-comment policy and allow questions to bloom into controversy? Within weeks, the National Enquirer had printed a full-page photo of Jenna laughing and holding a cigarette, crashing to floor atop a giggling female friend, and Barbara had given the slip to her Secret Service detail as she and some fellow Yale students drove to Manhattan to a World Wrestling Federation match, according to an article in the Yale magazine Rumpus. Using an electronic pass to go through a toll booth, the car in which Barbara was riding then speeded up and left the agents who were paying their toll in cash behind. Even when Laura was confronted with evidence that her girls were deliberately and dangerously evasive with their agents, she seemed unwilling to correct them. The agents were told to back off. The press was blamed for the reports. The unofficial position was that the twins were just singled out for unfair attention, even after Jenna was busted for underage drinking twice in 4 weeks. That summer of 2001, Jenna sat in a crowded bar and tried to sweet-talk the bartender into breaking the law and serving her. But he lost his nerve, and when he saw the guys with the earpieces, asked her to leave. Jenna, according to an account in U.S. News and World Report, was furious. She yelled at her agents and fled down a back alley. They gave chase, and when they caught up with her, she taunted them, "You know, if anything happens to me, my dad would have your ass." That's what she says to her Secret Service agents. But when she called her father to complain that her detail was interfering with her drinking, He sided with her agents. Not so her mother. Laura didn't want her girls to feel constrained, and the agents were ordered to pull back from traditional methods of coverage, according to the magazine's account. A few months later, the Secret Service scrambled to grab all presidential relatives on 9/11. The agents could not find Jenna for hours. More as we continue. I'm Ina Goldstein. Isn't this juicy? You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Side, get their side. You both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Are you tired of the weight loss battle? Do you find yourself feeling desperate to lose weight and keep it off? Listen to what UltraCarb users are saying about their experiences.
I've been on UltraCarb for 2 weeks. I've lost a total of 10 pounds, and I cannot believe it.
In the first 9 days since using UltraCarb, I lost 10 pounds. It's the only thing that's worked for me, and I am so excited to get down to my goal weight. Right now, I'm losing 20 pounds a month, and within 6 weeks, I'll have reached my goal. UltraCarb is amazing, and I would recommend it to anyone who really wants to lose this weight.
Whoever said losing weight has to be difficult has not used UltraCarb. UltraCarb works by blocking carbohydrates, the source of most weight gain. If you want to lose up to 20 pounds and 2 to 3 dress or pant sizes per month, call now. UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work or receive a full refund. Call now to look and feel better about yourself.
Call 1-800-451-6432 and find out how you can get 1 month free with your order. That's 1-800-451-6432.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
The Denver Center Theater Company presents its silver anniversary season and Stephen Vincent Benet's masterful story of the American Civil War, John Brown's Body. January 29th through February 28th. Single tickets are on sale. Now for this richly textured account of the American Civil War, utilizing music from the period and a cast of actors who played roles on both sides of the conflict. Tickets for John Brown's Body are on sale now by calling 303-893-4100 or denvercenter.org. Hi, I'm Doug Heller. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
125 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm reading to you the scathing chapter about the Bush twins from a new biography of Laura Bush, which is a largely a positive biography. It's called The Perfect Wife, The Life and Choices of Laura Bush. The reporter and the writer is Ann Gerhardt. She is a Washington Post staff writer. Before we continue with more, let's head to the phones. Adam calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Adam.
How are you today?
Good, thanks.
I was eating my lunch. You caught me with my mouth full. I'm sorry, because I can't wait to get on out to lunch and listen to your show.
Well, I'm glad that you spend lunchtime with me. Tell me what's on your mind.
I wanted to get your opinion on the fact that these girls are just running, you know, just rampant with their behavior. And do you remember when Rush Limbaugh went on the air and made comments about Chelsea?
Yes, I do. And I really have talked about that today.
You have talked about
yes,
it?
Yes, I have. You should have been listening from the... You can't miss a second here. You miss a little, you miss a lot.
No, I miss that.
Yeah.
I just find it shocking that it's like selective judgment, you know, and look at what... I think Chelsea now is a Rhodes Scholar, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think she was. She went to Oxford. I don't know for sure if she was a Rhodes Scholar, but certainly she was accepted to Oxford. Her grades were good at Stanford. I had one of her professors on who actually had her in a class, and he said she was really a ferocious student. And she was good to her Secret Service detail. And when you're good to the people protecting you, and these are highly trained men and women who are trained to take a bullet for you,
right,
they are more likely to support you if you get into trouble. And here are these two spoiled rich girls who treat them like they're gophers, who treat them like they're little flunkies.
Do you think that a child such as, if you contrast Chelsea with these Bush girls, doesn't that kind of cast reflection on their parents?
I think so, but we're going to talk about that as we continue, and I thank you, Adam, for the call. 303-382-1150. All right, more on this otherwise positive biography of Laura Bush. But she believes that her girls are being, essentially, she believes they're being victimized. Here, they're born rich, they're born with good looks, they're born with intelligence, good health, trust funds, and unlimited opportunities. Look at Neil Bush. I mean, this is a guy who has hardly done anything right in his life, and just on the basis of family connections. In a recent deal, he managed, I think, in a day to make $172,000, or was it more than that? I have the story here someplace that and I'll share it with you. But when Hillary Clinton made some money on a was it beef? Not options. It was like pork belly futures, cattle futures, something like that. Something that's a little bit tricky to do. Boy, they were investigated her up one side and down the other. And if Chelsea had burped in public, you would have seen an investigation almost rivaling her father's impeachment. Remember, $200 million spent on Clinton's penis to investigate Clinton's penis, and what about $5 million or so to investigate 9/11? All right, let's go on then. With the twins, and this is the chapter on the twins from Anne Gerhart's biography or book on Laura Bush. In Austin, in May 2001, Jenna was cited for underage drinking and appeared in municipal court where she was fined and given community service. A few weeks later, at a restaurant in Austin, she and Barbara, her sister, and three friends slipped into seats about 10 at night and ordered tequila shots and margaritas. The bartender immediately recognized the president's daughter, according to the account he later gave police. The quote, "The blonde in the pink halter top is Jenna Bush," he said. "You better card the whole group." When Jenna tried to use a Texas driver's license with a picture that didn't look anything at all like her, the waitress refused to serve her, but set down on the table the drinks and shots, which were drained. The restaurant manager called 911. When Austin police officer asked to see Jenna's ID, she burst into tears. "Please," she implored, according to the officer's account of the police report. She then stated that, "I do not have any idea what it is like to be a college student and not be able to do anything that other students get to do." Both twins were charged, you know, doesn't that sound like a selfish, whiny, teeny thing to say? Both twins were charged with misdemeanors. Jenna was booked with misrepresenting her age to buy booze, a charge complicated by the citation already on her record. She faced far stiffer penalties for the second offense under Texas's tough zero-tolerance policy, which her father had signed into law in 1997. Barbara, the other twin, was charged with being a minor in possession of alcohol. Barbara pleaded no contest and got the 8-hour community service and an order to attend alcohol awareness class. Jenna was fined $600, lost her driver's license for 30 days, and had to do more community service and attend alcohol awareness class. Again, the White House refused to comment. "If it involves the daughters and their private lives, it is a family matter," said the said spokesman Scott McClellan. This episode seemed egregious enough to demand some spin, however. A senior administration official let slip on CNN that a, quote, "not happy President Bush" had called Jenna from California, where he was talking up a park preservation program. There would be no word from Laura, however. Asked if she had spoken to her daughters, her aide said, "If she did, that would be private. Out of respect for the girls' privacy, we won't comment on them." In the days that followed, Press Secretary Ari Fleischer repeatedly lashed out at reporters who tried to ask questions about the incident. When they finally turned 21, when the twins finally turned 21 on November 25, 2002, White House aides breathed a huge sigh of relief. Mom threw the girls an elaborate party at the Crawford Family Ranch on November 30th, and busloads of revelers arrived dressed in costumes according to the theme, which was Cowboys and Indians. Jenna insisted on celebrating her actual 21st birthday, however, at the scene of her original crime, the Cheers Shot Bar, where she insisted staff cover the windows with black paper to prevent news crews from seeing inside. In the spring of 2002, while on European tour, on that European trip, Laura Bush was asked if her girls had gotten more used to the limelight. "No," she said, "I would have to say not. They're going to be juniors in college. They just want to do like other teenagers do." At the same time, those girls had gotten expert at exploiting the notoriety they had gained as a president's daughter. They popped up in Hollywood, where Jenna had an internship with an entertainment company and danced the night away with a posse of 20. In Saint-Tropez, Jenna partied with Sean Combs, P. Diddy. In New York, the twins sent one of their Secret Service agents over to procure an introduction to rocker Chris Cornell, the front man for the band Audioslave. The girls were not averse to showing up at places where controlled substances were enjoyed. At a Four Seasons grill room party for designer Zach Posen that Barbara attended, the air smelled of pot, according to the New York Daily News. In Los Angeles, they showed up at a Nike party where they met movie star Ashton Kutcher, who ended up taking them back to his house. He told Rolling Stone, "So we're hanging out," he said. "The Bushes were underage drinking at my house. When I checked outside, one of the Secret Service guys asked me if they'd be spending the night. I said no, and then I go upstairs to see another friend, and I can smell the green wafting out under his door. I open the door, and there he is, smoking out the Bush twins on his hookah." No comment, no comment, no comment, said the White House. When she talks about her girls at all publicly, the First Lady is given to making bland, nonspecific declarations of love and support. I think they're a lot of fun to be with, she said. I guess I would say that I'm engaged by them, with their personalities. I think, like every parent, if your children are happy, then parents are happy. And if they're unhappy, then there's nothing more difficult for parents. President Bush is slightly more revealing. I love them a lot. I am impatient with them. I wanted them to be normal when they were teenagers, and I wanted them to be working ladies, he told Ladies Home Journal. I've got to slow down. I've got to allow them to become the bright young ladies that they are becoming at their own pace, not at mine. They are beginning to realize that they've got to take some responsibility for their own lives and beginning to think about their career paths, he said. Laura chose her career path early. I didn't choose mine until a little late. And the president said, chuckling, I never really was that worried about the career path. And that's it. Well, he never had to be. It was whether he was going to go into public life or whether family connections were going to bail him out time after time after time, he didn't have to worry about it the way ordinary people do. But this section of the Laura Bush biography, kind of biography, is, I think, extremely revealing, that she thinks her daughters are victimized. They feel that they're victimized. They think that poor them, being the daughter of a president, doesn't allow them all these great perks that they've managed to exploit and take advantage of. They treat their service, Secret Service detail, like their servants and gophers and flunkies. And these girls sound to me like girls who are really spoiled, really indulge, and really feel like the world owes them a living. Now, from somebody who seems as level-headed as their mom, I'm so surprised that she has so far encouraged them along these lines. Here she is embarking, the way the scene opens in this chapter, she's embarking on her first solo trip as a First Lady, a 10-day visit to three European nations where she's going to speak out for Afghan women's rights. And she's dressed properly like the president's wife would be. She gets on the plane, and here's her daughter, dressed sloppily, hair hardly combed. She's just a mess. And the conclusion that the writer comes to, and she's a Washington Post staff reporter, is either her mother's asked her to make herself look appropriate in honor of the occasion, and Jenna has refused, or the mother didn't bother to ask her. And I think the conclusion everybody's coming to is that the mother didn't bother to ask her. Now, to me, that is really revealing of the family. 303-382-1150. Chelsea Clinton managed to keep her nose clean. She managed to treat her Secret Service detail with respect. These are, as the author points out, highly trained men and women who are willing to take a bullet on her behalf. And when you treat them well, they are going to be more likely to support you if things get out of hand, if there's a problem. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 1:36, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Cloudy, 48 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by AutoZone. Following an hour-and-a-half manhunt, Denver police arrested 23-year-old Robert Zamora in connection with the shooting of a Denver police officer this morning. Officer Kevin Kreitzer had stopped Zamora for speeding and was shot in the arm. The officer was treated and released from Denver Health Medical Center. The Colorado legislature has kicked off its 2004 session with legislators saying they plan to work together following last year's fight over redistricting. Governor Bill Owens will make his State of the State address at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. There was an 18% drop in the number of people who died on Colorado's roadways during 2003 than in the previous year. There were just over 600 fatalities in 2003 versus more than 700 in the year before. In sports, it's the Denver Nuggets versus the LA Lakers tonight at the Pepsi Center. Nuggets lost by 2 points when they last played the Lakers in December. If you want to avoid an expensive repair job on your car's automatic transmission, get to AutoZone and change your transmission fluid every 2 years or 24,000 miles. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:37.
I'm no professional photographer, but Walgreens' new digital photo center sure makes me feel like I am. With just the touch of a screen, I can choose and edit the photos I want. I can crop them, remove red eye, And when I'm ready to print, I can also choose the size and quantity. So in almost no time, I'm walking out with premium prints at a price that's anything but premium. Just 29 cents for each 4x6. Walgreens' new digital photo center, where America takes its digital pictures.
Listen up, men. Insight, the once-a-day tablet for natural male enhancement, powers into 2004 as a NASCAR team sponsor. And now, while supplies last, Team Insight is giving away free 30-day samples. To get a free 30-day sample box, just log on to 4insight.com. That's the number 4, E-N-Z-Y-T-E.com. Or call 1-800-778-5290. Look for the number 50 car and experience natural male enhancement with a free sample box of Insight. Call 1-800-778-5290. 1-800-778-5290.
KNRC News Time is 1:38. Time to check the roads with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the Air National Guard, and we're in the finishing touches of a few accidents. I-70 at 270, as well as I-76 in Sheridan, 70th and Washington is an injury action. Should be out of the way, and you will see slowing northbound I-25 as you approach Evans. Money for college plus job skills from a part-time job. You bet. Fuel your future in the Air National Guard. Call 1-800-TO-GO-ANG. That's 1-800-TO-GO-ANG. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. As our temperatures rise back to a seasonal norm this afternoon, it certainly is going to feel much, much better. Topping out around 45 with mostly cloudy skies. Look for clearing tonight with overnight lows close to 20 or 21. It'll be mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the 40s, and then mid-40s to mid-50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's cloudy, 48 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Join the Colorado Symphony Orchestra and pianist Chris O'Reilly for a performance of Prokofiev's Piano Concerto No. 2 on January 9th, 10th, and 11th. This Masterworks performance includes Mozart and more. Tickets available at all King Super's Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC Market Watch.
Dow Industrials reaching back near their lows of the day, down 51 points inside the final hour of Wall Street trading. NASDAQ's holding positive. It's up 11. The S&P 500 is off 2. Dow is still in the red despite gains in Intel, which is moving higher on some positive analyst comments. Stock is up almost a dollar. Flameout for Circuit City. Company says sales last month fell 2% despite the holiday rush. Circuit City stock is down a dollar and a quarter now, about 12%. Different story for Coach, which is raising its earnings outlook thanks to strong holiday sales. Analysts say this is a good indicator for the luxury retail market, though Coach stock still lower by just about a half dollar. There's a new push for internet telephone service, a trend playing in favor of Nortel Networks, a company tying up with Verizon to provide equipment for its service, a deal that's led to upgrades from Merrill Lynch and UBS. Nortel stock up 17% on heavy volume. I'm Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1:41 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. If you're just tuning in, you missed a very intriguing look at the Bush twins and their relationship with their mom and dad that is appearing in today's Washington Post is excerpted from a brand new book called The Perfect Wife, The Life and Choices of Laura Bush, a largely positive look at Laura Bush by a Washington Post staff writer by the name of Anne Gerhart. And she's looking at these two girls who feel like they've been victimized. They continue to be embarrassed by their parents, even as they are learning to exploit the position they hold so that they get to meet rock stars and stuff like that. They don't bother to dress up when they're accompanying to their mom and know that they're going to be photographed on, for example, her first solo tour to Europe, I guess, Laura Bush was making. So it really, I think, is illuminating about who the parents are, how terrorized they are by their own kids, how the kids seem spoiled and indulgent. They hate their Secret Service detail, apparently, according to this, or they don't like, they treat them like servants, like gophers, bellhops, with disdain, it sounds like, which is a complete contrast to the way Chelsea Clinton treated her Secret Service agents. And, of course, if they feel like they're being supported, they're going to do more to support you. What do you think this says about the twins? What does it say about the parents? What insights would you imagine? And how is it that if Chelsea, the one thing that Chelsea really did get high marks for is everyone said, even people who were avowed Clinton haters, that they must have done something right. They were good parents, apparently, because she turned out so well. Do parents have that much influence? Is it just a crapshoot? I have friends who say they've done everything for their kids, but the kids are still difficult kids. Sometimes kids are born wired wrong. But I think that the parents have an enormous influence on their children. And even though the kids are born with their own unique personalities, still there are zillions of tiny decisions that are made every single day by parents regarding their children, and all of it has a cumulative effect. So 303-382-1150. Interested to know your take on it. Brian, calling from Aurora. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. How are you?
Good, Brian.
Good. I listen to you a lot, and I agree with just about everything you say. But and I think Bush is a total moron. But I was just wondering, isn't what you're doing pretty much like what Rush did with Chelsea?
No, I don't think so. I think this is just... Because he held her up to ridicule. He said, who's the White House dog? And he had a picture of a dog, and then he had a picture of Chelsea. And who's the White House? Who that's ridicule. That's mean. What I'm talking about is somebody who's a respected writer who's written about the relationship of Laura and her daughters. There's a big difference there, Brian.
Right, but it's still, I mean, they're just kids. It's like, they really...
Yeah, but the mom is encouraging them that she doesn't even ask them to step up to the plate. These are kids who are... these are kids who, at taxpayer expense, are being protected. These are kids who are representative of the family, and they can't even be bothered to dress appropriately, and the mom doesn't even bother to ask them because they all feel like they're being victimized. I don't get that. I think it sounds like a lot of spoiled, indulged children, and the mom always struck me as fairly level-headed. Laura Bush didn't come from a fancy. She came from a solid middle-class family. She had a career early on. She was a teacher first and then a librarian. And so for her to overindulge the children like this and to have such children that are painted with such a whiny brush, I am rather surprised. I think it's revealing of them, and I don't think it's the same at all.
Okay, well, I don't agree.
Well, you cannot agree, but look at the circumstances. Rush was clearly out there to make fun of a preteen girl who couldn't help the way she looked and said, which is the White House dog, and holds up a picture of the dog, or I forget how he did it, but it was definitely a ridicule. This is apparently a factual report about Laura and the relationship with her children and what the kids are like. 303-382-1150. Matt, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, I don't agree exactly. I think these kids are actually rejecting, like you say, they're kind of rejecting their parents. They're embarrassed. Wouldn't you be?
Well, I haven't heard that these kids are becoming Democratic anytime soon. And I haven't heard that they're embarrassed about their parents for the substantive reasons that the rest of us are embarrassed to have him as the president. I mean, this is dad and mom, and dad's the president of the United States. I think you can be proud of your dad, especially after he was a flop all of his life and an alcoholic, and that he manages to become president of the United States. That accomplishment alone is pretty amazing.
Oh, well, of course. But, I mean, hanging out with the Hollywood elites and partying and smoking dope, it sounds like they reject conservatism. And I think that's a good thing. Good on them.
All right. Thank you for the call, Matt. 303-382-1150. John in North Glen. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi. I'm calling in regards to the president's press conference that went on while you were on the air and his move to try to get a shot thrown to the Hispanic voters by offering immunity to illegal aliens who've got jobs. But even more so, it's a big boon to the big business interests that have really put him in office by not going after their labor force. And, of course, if you're not prosecuting the people who are doing the work, you can't prosecute the people that are employing them who are committing illegal acts by hiring illegal aliens knowingly. And I think that it's a big shell game where he's trying multiple strategies here, and it's basically aimed at the working poor who are already American citizens who are going to have to compete against people who now don't even face the threat of being illegal aliens who are willing to work cheaper for the dirty jobs that have to be done in this country.
So what's your point? What is your take on it? In other words, besides what you've set out, which is intriguing, what do you think is the way to handle the problem of illegal immigration when we are more than happy to use those people? Those are the people who raise our kids, clean our houses, grow our crops, sew our garments, often in sweatshop conditions.
Well, my
they're happy, and they're usually eager for the more meager wages that we pay them as opposed to American workers. What do we do in a case like that? How are we supposed to do it?
My solution is jail time for the people who employ them. If you're hiring somebody you know is illegal, you should go to jail. They get put back across the border, and you go to jail.
John, let me ask you a couple of questions. Are you a Republican or a Democrat? Are you a conservative or a liberal or a progressive? What are you? Well, how would you describe yourself?
I would classify myself as a progressive.
A progressive Democrat, Republican?
I would classify myself as a progressive populist.
Who did you vote for in the last presidential election?
Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader, okay. So you believe then that any employer caught hiring an illegal goes to jail?
Yes.
It's not going to happen.
I know it's not.
For all the reasons that you set forward, it's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen for some other reasons that you didn't set forward. In states like California, I think even in states like Colorado, and I think also states like Texas, definitely California, you couldn't have certain industries without the use of illegals. And so, therefore, every few years, there's an amnesty program, and then they have another guest worker program. Once they called it the Bracero program in California, and then they had something else. And it's always the same thing, where they legitimize those who have come forward. They have some kind of a deal to try and get you to go home again when you're finished working for us at low wages, doing the work that we don't want to do, and so on. And I don't know what the answer is.
The answer is that you don't put up with people who knowingly break the law.
You can say that, but as a practical matter, you're never going to be able to accomplish it. First of all, you're not going to be able to stop illegal immigration, particularly when Mexico is as poor as it is and we are as rich as we are. People are always going to risk their lives to come over, so you're never going to be able to stop it. And because we have a need for it, there isn't the will or the impetus to really stop it. And ask yourself, does it really take jobs away from Americans that Americans want to do? Are Americans standing in line to go work in the fields as farm workers? And you know what I think?
If it paid better, it had better conditions.
Oh, well, all right. Let's take that then. If it paid better and if it had better conditions. If it paid better, John, we would have to pay more for our produce.
We already pay more for the people who have to go out there and round those people up after they've done the work and send them back across the border. We're already paying for it.
I don't think we're paying very much for those people, but it would cost way more in terms of what you pay for produce in the grocery store right now. And so therefore, this system will continue. Plus which, where are you going to get the Americans who are willing to do that tough stoop labor? It's real tough work out there. And Americans don't want to do it. And I'll tell you what, at the risk of being called names for this, I really think a lot of prison systems, and we have the highest rate of incarceration in the world, I think that work is transformative. And people ought to learn skills, work skills, and they ought to do this kind of work. But then other people would scream slave labor. But I think some of those people, you could transform yourself. In San Francisco, at I think the San Bruno jail, they have a garden. The inmates work in that garden. And guess what? That garden's produce is so good, it goes to some of the finest restaurants in San Francisco, and there are plenty of fine restaurants in San Francisco. So the jail makes money that way. The restaurants get great produce, and the inmates make some money and have pride, and they've learned a skill. So in a lot of ways, maybe we could think about transforming a resource that's just sitting there being warehoused in a lot of prisons. But I don't think Americans are going to want to pay for that increased cost of produce if American workers are involved, and I don't know if there are going to be enough American workers who would do it.
But we already do pay, and it's not just in terms
of... We would pay more, John. Whatever we're paying, we would pay vastly more.
we also wind up with people who come into this country who commit crimes because we leave the borders porous in order to get that slave labor.
Well, and you also come in, you also coming into this country are people who wind up going to Harvard and do great things. So you've got to see it in its,
right,
in its whole, in the whole texture. Huh?
They're not illegal if they're going to Harvard.
Well, in fact, that they are illegal and go, they come, they start out illegal and go, I actually met people who fit this description. I met a man once at a party in San Francisco whose parents were farm workers, and he became an attorney. He went to Harvard. So somewhere along the line they got legal, or maybe they didn't, but he did graduate from Harvard. And even the people who don't get to go to Harvard, there are many people who come into this country who add greatly to it. So I think you have to erase the idea that anybody who's coming in illegally is only coming in to take, not to give, and to commit a crime, not to commit an act of humanity. 303-382-1150. I'm Ina Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Don't settle for half the talk. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNIC.
Winter is just around the corner, and sometimes it's difficult to make ends meet. If either you or your aging relatives are having trouble, you may be able to help them find benefits. AARP and the National Council on the Aging are helping people complete a benefits checkup to find programs that save money on groceries, medical care, energy bills, and more. Call 303-318-6764 to learn more. 303-318-6764. AARP, the power to make it better.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
On Thursday, January 15th, the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame will be hosting a fundraising and book signing event showcasing 12 Colorado authors. The event will be held at the Colorado Business Bank located at 17th and Champa Streets from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Meet the authors, including Marilyn Vanderburr Atler and Dottie Lamb. For tickets and information on the Colorado Book Authors Signing Event Thursday, January 15th, call 303-423-2315. That's 303-423-2315. Please do your part to help conserve our precious water supply. Visit denverwater.org to learn how. Collectively, we can make a big difference.
Tune in Saturday morning from 10 a.m. till noon for Style Matters, sponsored locally by Aspen Grove, where life meets style. Style Matters is a weekly discussion of the Denver lifestyle as it relates to fashion and style. Hosted by Judy Schwartz and Evelyn Ehrman of the Style Matters column of the Rocky Mountain News, you'll hear lively discussion regarding fashion, style, local shopping, and more. That's Style Matters, Saturday morning from 10 till noon on 1150 KNRC, sponsored by Aspen Grove, shopping Colorado style.
Hi, I'm Dominic Brasha.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1:55 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and we're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about the Bush twins and how they stack up against Chelsea Clinton and how indulged they are and how Laura Bush continues to foster apparently the idea in them that somehow they're victimized because their dad's a president. They're embarrassed by their parents. Amazing, isn't it? Well, not for the reasons we would be embarrassed by them, having to be president. But, I mean, gosh, your father's the president of the United States. Wouldn't you act right in public? 303-382-1150. Also talking about Bush giving illegal workers broad new rights. Is this a bid for the Hispanic vote? President Bush will propose a sweeping overhaul of the nation's immigration laws today that could give legal status, and he's already done so, to millions of undocumented workers in the U.S. So what do you think about that? Myron, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Nina.
You're welcome. Myron, I'm going to spell my name for you. It's Enid, E-N-I-D.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not a long-term listener, and I heard wrong. I think that Mr. Bush is trying to get the Hispanic vote. But more importantly, I think that the caller, one thing I agree with that he said that was just before me, is that, yeah, he is trying to help out big business so that they won't be fined like Tyson Chicken. And I think basically they can make some changes that will affect the situation in a positive manner and make our laws not be laughed at. You know, because, I mean, you look at here in Denver, there's hundreds of Hispanic people who gather in a certain area downtown, a few blocks radius, and people go there to hire them for construction every day.
Right, day labor.
Yeah, and now the INS knows they're there. And they don't go down there and round them up and ship them back.
Sometimes the INS does, but it's they do it sometimes. They've done it in California at times, and then it's caused a big firestorm when they have. So what? Tell me what your point is. What do you think ought to be done here about illegal immigration?
Okay, I think that they need to make more American consulates, not just have one in the capital, Mexico City. They need to have them in border towns like Tijuana and Juarez, right, where the people go to cross into the United States. And instead of it being a 4 to 6 month process with our technologies today and computers, there's no reason for that. It could be probably a 3 or 4 week process, and get more people to come in here legally and not be risking their lives out there in the desert, in Sonoma County or wherever, and
Sonora.
Being packed in trucks. Yeah, I mean there's no sense in that. And if the people,
so why isn't the government opening up more legal immigration?
Well, they have. Except for agricultural workers, the farm workers, they have to say where they're going to be working. Well, they don't know where they're going to be working. Okay, and they have to go to Mexico City. I almost said New York City. They have to go to Mexico City and go to the American consulate. Well, that's a second trip. They have to travel there, and I don't know if they have to stay there the whole time while they're.
And that's our only consulate is in Mexico City.
That's
is that the only U.S. consulate is in the whole state?
That's what I believe. It was that way 3 years ago, unless it's changed. That's what it is.
So you believe in making immigration more open between Mexico and the U.S.?
Right, making legal immigration easier and to where they don't have to jump through all these hoops, And
well, that's a pretty good point. That's a pretty good proposal. Why do you think it's not happening? Politically, there isn't the will for it?
Yeah, basically. They don't want to offend the far right and lose those votes. It's all about getting reelected.
I think getting elected
in the first place.
I think you're right about that part, Myron. I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. More about what Bush would do to give illegal workers broad new rights. As we continue, he's proposing a sweeping overhaul of our immigration laws. Is it just to get more votes? What's the real reason? I'm Enid Goldstein. One more hour of Enid Live coming up right here on AM 1150.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, 48 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Albertsons. After an intense hour-and-a-half manhunt, Denver police arrested 23-year-old Robert Zamora in connection with the shooting of a Denver police officer this morning. Denver Police Detective Teresa Garcia says police received a lot of help from nearby residents during the search for the shooting suspect.
A lady in the 1300 block of Raleigh did call because the suspect, Robert, approached her and asked her for a ride out of the neighborhood. Of course, she refused and called the police, and the suspect subsequently was taken into custody without incident.
Garcia says Officer Kevin Kreitzer was working radar patrol when he pulled over a white Mustang for speeding. When the suspect refused to show his hands out the window, Kreitzer asked him to step out of the car.
The suspect refused to show the officer his hands. At that point, the suspect exited his vehicle and started shooting at the officer, hitting the officer once in the left arm. The suspect takes off running on foot, leaving his car behind, as well as a two-year-old little boy in the vehicle.
Kreitzer fired back at the suspect but missed. The child was picked up by his grandfather. Investigators don't know the relationship between Zamora and the child. Kreitzer was released from Denver Medical Health Center in good condition around noon. The Colorado legislature kicked off its 2004 session today. Senate Minority Leader Joan Fitzgerald says Democrats are not going to quit pushing for Amendment 23, which maintains for schools in grades K through 12.
There has been a lot of talk about how Amendment 23 is responsible for the fiscal train wreck of the state. Last year it was Tabor that forced massive cuts to state services and not Amendment 23.
Both Republicans and Democrats sounded a conciliatory tone as things got started today. Republican State Senator Ron Tech of Grand Junction says the tone set on the opening day of the session is to be expected.
You know, the first day we always make nice to each other. And we'll see what happens the next day. I truly hope that we have a better attitude in working together.
Governor Bill Owens will deliver his State of the State address tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Robbers hit a store in Castle Pines yesterday. One of the suspects shot in that incident. The King Supers in Castle Pines was hit after 7:30 last night, and one of the two suspects was arrested as he tried to drive away. The second was caught around an hour later and was shot by officers. His injuries were considered to be non-life-threatening. President Bush has unveiled sweeping immigration reform proposals that he says will make the U.S. a more compassionate, humane, and stronger country. Noting that the U.S. is a nation of immigrants, Bush told a White House ceremony that America is a welcoming society.
America is a stronger and better nation because of the hard work and the faith and the entrepreneurial spirit of immigrants.
The president's proposals are designed to make it easier for immigrants to legally work in the U.S. Millions of illegal immigrants would be granted temporary legal status if they can prove they have jobs. Bush said the reforms will also help make the nation's borders more secure. It'll be another week before the Mars rover named Spirit rolls off its platform and starts to roam the Martian soil. Scientists working at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab are still analyzing the rover's latest pictures from Mars and haven't even decided where to send the probe to conduct its research. Several small problems have cropped up in an otherwise flawless mission. Operating temperatures are a little higher than expected. One of the airbags that might entangle the rover as it maneuvers off the pedestal did not fully retract either. Lost in the hype over NASA's latest mission to Mars is the Jet Propulsion Lab's other current mission called the Stardust Project. The Minnesota Planetarium Society's Bob Bundor says the search for life from a comet is just as crucial as the search for life on Mars.
Comets have a lot of ice on them. These ices, if you will, are believed possibly to be the bringers of water to this planet and origins of life, because they have some of the complex carbon compounds in comets. So all of this relates directly to our origins.
The Stardust spacecraft flew through the tail of a comet and took pictures, which are now available on NASA's website. It also captured a few of the tiny particles, which it's bringing back to Earth. That capsule, though, containing those particles, won't arrive back on this planet until 2006. On Wall Street, stocks were mixed just before the close of the trading session. The Dow is down nearly 20 points, the NASDAQ up just over 17, the S&P 500 is down 0.10. In sports, the L.A. Lakers come to town tonight to play the Denver Nuggets. It'll be the first time Kobe Bryant has been on a Colorado court as opposed to in one since he was accused of raping an Eagle County hotel worker last summer. Let Albertsons help you trim up in 2004 with Lean Cuisine, now 50% off, and boneless, skinless chicken breasts only $1.88 a pound through January 13th. Albertsons, helping make your life easier. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Frankly, it's difficult to imagine that a breed of men as fierce and warlike as the Scots ever learned to embrace the niceties of a civilized life, much less advance them. I mean, there they were, traipsing around the wee glen in nothing but their bagpipes. And next thing you know, they've invented distilled liquor. Now it's Sean Connery, the Highland Games. Why, they're even making stained glass right here in Colorado. Beautiful stained glass. Extraordinary, really, that everyone can appreciate. Even men like myself. Real men who don't feel the need to toss around telephone poles in a pathetic attempt to compensate for the notion that their forefathers wore skirts.
English swine. Did you not see Braveheart? Hi, this is Martin Faith, the owner of Scottish Stained Glass. If you want to make a unique statement in your home, think leaded glass. It's private, beautiful to look at, and surprisingly affordable, with prices starting at just $145, including insulation. For a free in-home consultation, call us at 303-766-3811. 303-766-3811.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Goodyear, and a pretty quiet drive out there right now, accident-free, but we are seeing some slowing northbound I-25 as you approach Evans. Also, a little bit of traffic through on I-25 northbound through the Tech Center. Watch for that. Now through January 17th, get up to a $50 cash card with the purchase of four selected Goodyear tires. Call 1-800-GOODYEAR for complete details and the retailer nearest you. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. As our temperatures rise back to a seasonal norm this afternoon, it certainly is going to feel much, much better. Topping out around 45 with mostly cloudy skies. Look for clearing tonight with overnight lows close to 20 or 21. It'll be mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the 40s, and then mid-40s to mid-50s on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's cloudy, 48 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and I want to remind you, tomorrow we're going to be talking about cowboy hats. Well, now, not for the whole show, but toward the end. We'll be talking with Richie Rand, and he's written the Cowboy Hat Book. And don't laugh. I've been interested in cowboy hats because I don't know enough about them. And I think the one that I bought says that I'm a wannabe in cowboy code, but I just don't, am not smart enough to realize that. This is all in anticipation of the National Western Stock Show, Rodeo and Horse Show. It's going to start January the 10th, so Saturday to the 25th at the National Western Complex. And we are live from the Press Club, Denver Press Club, on Friday, noon to 3. You're welcome to stop by and cheer us on if you like. And the focus of the show is going to be the opening of the stock show, which we broadcast live from the stock show last year, and it was really fun. And I went several times last year to the stock show because I just thought it was intriguing. I had the best time. So we're going to be focusing on that live from the Denver Press Club on Friday next week. Dr. Dina Dell will be joining us, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Healthiness. We have lots more guests who will be coming round to drop in on the show and enlighten us. What we've been talking about, a lot of different things today. We've been talking about the Bush twins, a scathing new chapter in a new book, an otherwise very positive look at Laura Bush on the twins and how they're indulged and how their parents don't ask that much of them and how spoiled they are and how badly they treat their Secret Service agents and how little they, you know, here they are in the White House when they come home for vacations, maybe. And they don't even want to bother to come down and meet the guests and say hello. Think of the quality of guests you could meet. If you were a kid that age, you would have access to, you know, the top political people in the world often, especially the state dinner. They don't want to do it. They're not remotely interested. And today, President Bush called for a major overhaul of America's immigration system to grant legal status to millions of undocumented workers in the U.S., saying that the current program is not working. Well, it isn't working and it is working, depending on your view. Out of common sense and fairness, our laws, he said, should allow willing workers to enter our country, fill jobs that Americans are not filling. Bush's election year proposal is designed to win support among Hispanic voters while helping meet the needs of American employers. So they're looking for cheap labor. He's looking for cheap votes. His plan would create a temporary worker program for undocumented workers now in the U.S. and those in other countries who have been offered employment here. As a nation that values immigrants and depends on immigrants, we should have immigration laws that work and make us proud, the president said, yet today we do not. Instead, we see many employers turning to the illegal labor market. We see billions of hardworking men and women condemned to fear and insecurity in a massive undocumented economy. Illegal entry across our borders makes more difficult the urgent task of securing the homeland, the president said. And it also makes a mockery of it. Clearly, we can't secure it because so many illegals are able to get in and without all that much scrutiny. Bush said his proposals, if enacted by Congress, would provide a more compassionate system for immigrants who live in the shadows of American society. His proposal would provide a way for illegal immigrants who can show they have employment to work legally, though temporarily, in the U.S. The new temporary worker program, which also would include people still in their native countries who have a job lined up in the U.S., would not, like the temporary visa programs already in existence that involve mostly technical experts, apply only to a certain sector of the economy or industry. Much of the detail of the president's proposal was to be worked out by Congress in future negotiations with the White House. So it's all fairly vague at this point. Bush wants to increase the nation's yearly allotment of green cards that allow for permanent U.S. residency, but won't say by how much. Around 1 million green cards a year are issued now, though just 140,000 of them are employment-based. He also wants a worker's first three-year term in the program to be renewable, but won't say for how long. He won't set the amount that workers should pay to apply for the program, and he won't specify how to enforce the requirement that no American worker wants the job the foreign worker is taking, according to administration officials who spoke on condition of anonymity. Well, this is very interesting because he's just saying, you know what, let's have this program, but we don't have any details. In other words, they really don't even actually have a program. 303-382-1150. How do you feel about what Bush is doing here, particularly if you're a Republican? Is this a good thing or not a good thing as far as you're concerned? Does this just acknowledge the reality that already exists in this country? We need cheap labor. We're not, a lot of Americans are not willing to do this kind of work. I was always opposed to the HB, what was that number, the visas for high-tech workers from foreign countries, particularly when we had our own high-tech people here out of work and looking for work. But they wanted to have people that they could pay a whole lot less to, the employers did. And I didn't think that that was fair, but you're talking about a lot of labor here that Americans simply don't want to do, and they don't want, and the illegals who are doing it are happy to be doing it for the amount of money paid. Americans, if they could be persuaded to do it, would demand more money, and then we would all have to pay higher prices. Are you willing to do that in the to stand up for your principles? 303-382-1150. Brad calling from Evergreen. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid, I would be willing to pay higher prices for that. I think it's crazy that we allow legal and illegal immigrants to come in here and take our jobs, especially if we...
Your kids going to want to work in doing farm labor, Brad? You have kids?
Well, I don't know, but if we've got 6% unemployment, we got an awful lot of people that could fill those jobs. And if people
But will they fill them? And yeah, are they in cities away from farms?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Are they in cities away from farms? Can they fill those jobs? Will they fill those jobs? Are they trained to fill those jobs? What would it add to the cost of the our food?
Yeah.
If we were restricting this only to agricultural kinds of jobs.
Right. Well, if we restricted it to agriculture, I think the same principle applies. Okay, you got to pay more to an American worker, but that's what it's all about. I don't like it when...
Do you want your kids to grow... Do your kids... You have kids, Brad?
Yeah, I have 3 daughters.
And what do they do for a living? How old are they?
They're young.
They're young. You want them to go to college or you want them to grow up to work in the farms?
I prefer they went to college.
Yeah. Well, I think most parents would prefer that their kids get jobs that paid them benefits... heavy stoop labor and didn't expose them to all those chemicals and pesticides that are being used on the produce this is what the farm workers unions are really concerned about.
Well, I don't think it's an issue of the chemicals on the produce, but I will say, you know.
Let me tell you something. Don't laugh it off. If you're picking that stuff and you're working out there and you're being exposed to a lot of the sprays and so on, it's a big health issue. Don't laugh about it. It's a big problem.
It's a good issue then.
You want your girls to grow up to work in the on farm?
Yes, I want my girls to work on a farm, especially while they're going to college. I did for 4 years while I went to college. I worked really hard. I was a harvest crew chief, and let me tell you,
where
it's very hard work, and you learn a lot. I was up in Michigan.
Where in Michigan?
Yeah, you went to U of M, didn't you?
Yeah, where in Michigan were you working?
Right, just north of Ann Arbor, just all over through central Michigan on the pea harvest crew. We go all over the place, but it's really good for people to work those jobs when they're younger. Now, would I want my daughters to be 40 years old and working out in the field, if they loved that as a profession, if they enjoyed doing it?
Brad, please, you want your kids working from harvest to harvest like migrant labor, for under a minimum wage, exposed to all those pesticides, doing really hard stoop labor, being, you know, I don't think so, Brad.
Poor people who have to work for a living.
Oh, well then maybe you could maybe, how come you're still not doing this job that you seem to think so much of when you were harvesting crops in Michigan? How come you're not still doing it? Because it's such a great job with a great future.
I'm not saying it's a great job with a great future, but what I did say is that's what they wanted with their life, I would support it. Certainly I would hope
that
they would want to accomplish more, but there's lots of people who need work.
Lots of people who need work, Brad. I agree with you there, but very few of them who are going to do this kind of work for the amount that's paid. Adam in Aurora, hi, you're live with Enid. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I haven't spoken to you in a long time. The last time we talked, we actually agreed on the topic, but I got to say, I can't be any further away from agreeing with you as I am today. I understand your point that you're saying gross, you know, the produce is going to go up. It's really a moot point because if you look at what we spend on health care for illegal immigrants, what floods into our hospitals as we're birthing these children, the vaccines that we are paying for, the Medicare, that we are paid. I'm sorry.
So your point is that we pay more for illegals than they provide us in return? You're actually wrong about that. In fact, very often illegals pay into the system and they can't take any of it out. They pay taxes, they pay Social Security, a lot of them, they can't take any of it out.
Ooh.
So, and a lot of them contribute to our society in ways beyond money. If they're sewing your garments, if they're taking care of your kids, if they're working in restaurants, if they're picking the produce, the fruit and vegetables, the agricultural products that you're eating, and keeping the prices low, they're helping you out in a lot of ways.
And I don't think Americans are racist or against people that are hardworking, that are going to contribute to this society coming in the country. The problem is that we have a flood of Mexicans. There's a reason why we don't live in Mexico. If you've ever been to Mexico, you know that it's not a great place.
You're wrong about that. It depends on where. Mexico is a very great place. Have you ever been down to the pyramids at Chichen Itza in Yucatan? Have you ever gone scuba diving in Cozumel? I mean, have you ever been to some of these places? Adam, you don't know what you're talking about. If you're going to call this show, don't embarrass yourself like this. Where have you been in Mexico? To the brothels in Tijuana? To the whorehouses there?
I also love that you say that Americans aren't willing to work these jobs, but it's okay that Mexicans can, because they're degrading jobs that Americans don't want to work.
I'm not saying that they're degrading jobs. You have put that on it. I'm just saying Americans, are you signing up? Adam, what do you do for a living?
It's a joke.
Do you do for a living?
What do I do for a living?
Yeah, what do you do for a living, Adam?
I work in pharmaceuticals.
Can I interest you in getting a job in the as a farm laborer in Colorado and California and Texas? Could I interest you in doing that kind of work for under a minimum wage, Adam?
You're talking to a person who would work three jobs if it came to me feeding.
I'm asking you whether you would trade in your pharmaceutical job to go work in the fields. I am asking. You're so happy for somebody else's kids to do it. And when I am giving you this golden opportunity to trade in your dopey pharmaceutical job for a really honest job where you get dirt under your fingernails to work in the fields, I don't think you're really enthusiastic about it. 303-382-1150. Terrence calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid. I have always, always agreed with you, but this time I have to take issue with you. You're suggesting that...
I don't know if you're disagreeing with me or if you're disagreeing with President Bush, because I'm not so sure I've taken a position. Everyone thinks they're disagreeing with me, but I'm just telling you what Bush wants to do.
Okay, let me share this with you. There are many of us out there who are willing to do those jobs that you suggest that we're not willing to do. I work for a major corporation here in Denver, an airline. 6 months ago, we were making decent pay cleaning airplanes. Now when those aircrafts land, everyone that's cleaning the aircraft doesn't speak English. It's not that we're not willing to do the jobs. It's just we can't pay or make a living at $6 an hour in today's world. There's many people who are willing to clean aircrafts, but we just can't do it for $6 an hour because society doesn't allow us to do that. My mortgage won't support a $6 an hour job.
Right.
And so I think that's real important.
So then what happens? See, this is the dilemma. You should be paid more than $6 an hour to do that work. And then the airlines are trying to cut their costs because they're in a jeopardized situation. So they're going to try and get the cheapest labor they can.
Well,
somebody coming up from Mexico looks at $6 an hour as an improvement over their situation in Mexico.
It's a win-win situation for corporate. It's not just in the migrant fields where this is taking place. This is taking place in corporate America where jobs 5 years ago, we could at least have some quality of life. It's not there anymore. But this is the perfect opportunity for Howard Dean to get the Bubba vote. Because I'm here to tell you, Bubba is not happy about this.
Well, I think you make an excellent case, Terrence, and I thank you for calling 303-382-1150. Here, I'm not advocating illegal immigration. I just know that we have a situation that we can't control. What do you do about it? What George Bush is trying to do, alienating some of his base here, is that he wants to legalize it in a sort of temporary way with no real details here. The details are completely vague. He wants to make it easier for the corporations to recruit cheap labor, really. The lines are full. They will open up. They've been full for a while, but hang in with us, 303-382-1150, Hirsch on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid. Hi, Hirsch.
Hi, Enid. How are you?
Good.
Hey, listen, I agree with you on this particular issue, that this is probably just a political ploy because it's so vague, and since there are no details, it almost seems like it's a deliberate attempt just to get some Hispanic votes in the election year. But I'm calling regarding your comment that you made earlier about H-1B immigration. I think that you're working from some pretty false assumptions. You said that that this is essentially for high-tech workers, and we had our own high-tech workers. And this was basically not good for the country or the economy. And I'd like to say that that couldn't be farther from the truth. In fact, the whole 90s high-tech boom happened because, we were running a huge shortage of high-tech workers, and big corporations in California, Silicon Valley, wanted to fill that gap right away to fuel their growth. And basically, workers were imported from India and China, and the quotas were jacked up from 65,000 per year up to 100, 105, then 195. And a lot of that was done under the guise of the Y2K threat because, as you know, there's...
they were going to try and reprogram all those computers, and everyone thought the world was going to come to an end of the year 2000. Okay, but Hirsch, are you one of the H... What is the number again? HB?
H-1B.
H-1B.
I'm not a high-tech worker. That's the other fallacy, that H-1B essentially is an employment-based immigration category, not necessarily high-tech. And in the process to get an H-1B, you have to prove to the government that there is no American worker alive who can do your job. And you do that by proving two things. One, by giving out advertisement in all the national dailies for a job, and if American people apply, then you don't your application is rejected. And two, you have to prove that the salary that is being paid to you by your employer is equal to what the Department of Labor recommends as the prevailing wage. So it's a pretty hard, grueling thing that takes a lot of legal fees, and it, in essence, ensures that an American job is not taken, and B, that the H-1B worker is not exploited. So when you said that,
there were many cases in California where H-1B workers were exploited. They were sort of treated like chattel because if you objected in any way, there was always a threat of deportation. So there were abuses of that system. But I think that there are fewer now H-1B visas being granted as more Americans are out of work.
Well, that's not.
And as the tech bubble has burst, so there probably isn't the same need for high tech workers that there was a few years ago.
It's gone back to the older levels. That increase that was done under the guise of the Y2K bubble, essentially that thing ran out. So we're back to our 65,000 immigrants per year.
So you're arguing in favor of H-1Bs?
Absolutely. I think
we have enough unemployed people who are looking for work that we have to import other people doing it?
Well, you don't understand. The thing is, in the H-1B process, if you're unable to prove to the federal government that your job cannot be performed by...
Yeah, but there's a way to write that, this job description, that makes it sound like only one person in the whole universe can do that job. I can't believe...
Believe me, I've gone through that process, and you cannot be specific. It is very stringent, and the Department of Labor actually, has to approve that ad. You know, I'll give you a specific case. I'm an architect, okay? And you can't say that we're looking for an architect who's 5'9" and can jump on one leg in a circle. You know, you have to say, we're looking for an architect who is an expert in hotels. Boom. That's about as specific as you can be. And we gave that ad in the Architectural Digest. And
Hirsch, how are you doing something so specific that no American can be an architect the way you are?
Because in 1995, when I made that application, and we gave an ad in the Architectural Digest...
Tell me fast. We have to take a break. Tell me fast. What do you provide that an American architect can't do?
I provide a service that we have a shortage of. There are many American architects...
Like what? What is that service that we have a shortage of? We have a lot of architects and not that many buildings being built.
In 1995, Enid, I got through because we had a shortage of architects. If I applied today, I'd probably get rejected.
Okay, we're going to leave it there, Hirsch. I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. We're talking about immigration. George Bush saying he wants to change immigration laws, make illegals legal now, make it not a crime for employers to employ these people, and very vague on the specifics. What do you think? 303-382-1150.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Jim Condor here talking with Bev Rouleau from International Optique. Bev, fashion eyewear the best in the city and now a sale. Bev, what's up with that?
Jim, International Optique is having our annual sale now through January 15th, and it's a blowout.
I know the details. If you purchase prescription frames and lenses at International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University and Orchard, you receive a 25% discount.
It's a family affair at International Optique. Just bring your family and friends. Everyone receives 25% off their new frame and lenses.
And don't forget to use your Flex Dollars while saving money. If you run out of time to use your Flex Dollars, come in for a gift certificate to be used later.
Jim, the excitement about International Optique is that we carry frames with a little attitude or a lot of attitude. Either way, let our staff make sure you walk out looking beyond fabulous.
For the best in eyewear in Denver, join International Optique at Tamarack Square or International Optique at University in Orchard now through January 15th for their spectacular 25% off prescription frame and lens sale. It's not what you know, it's who you know, and we know International Optique.
AM 1150 KNRC features more in-depth reporting than any other Denver talk station. Our in-depth reports have been recognized by the Colorado Broadcasters Association and the Associated Press for 4 awards of excellence. Hear in-depth reports from award-winning KNRC reporters Mark Roberts and Stacey Farb during the Greg Dobbs Morning Show or anytime at knrcradio.com where you can click it and own it. Denver's in-depth talk station, AM 1150 KNRC.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
228 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. Let's go to the phones. 303-321-1150 Kashmir. Hi, you're live with Enid.
How's it going?
Good.
All right. First, I think the whole George Bush thing, his daughters, I think you are kind of exploiting them just by you coming out screaming on his kids. I think those are his kids, not his problem. And about the immigrants, I think that how are we taking care of another country we can't take care of home? Why don't we try to go out and round up the homeless people and get them together instead of getting people in other countries together?
Where do I start, Kashmir? I mean, the homeless people, some of them are so addled and a lot of substance abuse. Good luck with that. But in terms of a larger principle, which is putting people to work who want to work and don't have jobs, I'm for that, yes. And as for the Bush kids, I'm reading you a segment from the biography of Laura Bush talking about their relationship with their parents and how indulged they are. And if you don't think that that's a proper fodder for discussion and observation and how revealing it is about their parents and the relationship with the parents, and you and I really disagree, I think you're wrong about that. 303-382-1150. Ben, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I'm for the guest worker program that Bush is proposing.
Okay, why?
Because we do have a huge problem with illegal immigration, and two things are going to happen because of this for sure. One is, people are going to be legal, which means that they're going to pay taxes, which has been a big complaint by a lot of conservatives.
A lot of them already pay taxes, and they can't get anything out of the system. But go ahead. What else?
Well, but if you pay taxes, you can get things out of the system. You
right.
can also then be eligible to get a driver's license, which means that instead of paying, I know some immigrants who are paying $800 a month because they're not legal for insurance currently,
mm-hmm.
they'll be able to get that at a market rate. So I know that's going to happen, and I understand your concerns about...
How are they paying $800 a month if they're not legal? How are they able to get any insurance?
They are. They just absolutely are, and they're being taken advantage of in huge
ways. That's, yeah, and also until they got those cards, the... matricula card, consular cards.
Right.
They were being taken advantage of by the banks as well and trying to wire money home. They were
right.
having to pay a lot of
so
money
I
to do that.
I think that's a big bonus because I think it's now proven that just because they're not supposed to be here, they're still here. And
they're still
coming.
What about the idea that somebody proposed about just opening up immigration and not making everybody illegal? It's just whoever passes muster gets to come in. But you know what? The ones who don't or the ones who can't afford the process are still going to find a way to come in illegally. So maybe nothing gets solved in that respect.
Well, I just don't think the fees are going to be all that high because of the population that's applying for it. Because
it isn't just the fees. It's going to be the process. And Paul Campos, who writes editorial, does a column in one of the papers, I forget whether it's the Rocky or the Post, was talking about walking over across the border, and it was nothing to get across to Mexico, but coming back it was a huge process that if he had been in his car rather than walking, it would have been more than an hour because of the complications and because we're scared about terrorism and so on.
Right. So what I see here is that these people, the people who get these cards are going to have computerized cards that are going to be pretty difficult to beat on. And so it is actually going to speed things up at the border, and that's a good thing for everyone.
Oh, Ben, I don't know. Dream on. Thanks for the call. 303-382-1150. Everything can be counterfeited, and the process will be probably a complicated one. I'm just guessing. Van in Boulder. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey, Enid. What exactly is your position on this? Is just that it's vague and...
Well, what Bush is doing is, mm-hmm. in a way, he's succumbing to both politics and real politic at the same time. But tell me what you wanted. Tell me what your point is.
Well, my point is that, you know, back in the mid-90s, I was working high tech before I went into real estate. And I worked with an outfit called Ubix, which would, you know, essentially import Indian labor, computer technology expertise. And I think that, you know, what you describe as far as the abuses are very, very real. In terms of, you know, you know, H-1V folks can't unionize. H-1V guys, you know, they really have to, you know, play by the company line. You know, in a from a corporate standpoint, they're ideal. You know,
right, and they're you know, what do you want to call it? Labor.
Chattel.
Yeah, chattel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's
indentured. I was looking for the word indentured.
Right, because I actually worked with a company where they had a problem with one of their H-1Bs, and they just, you know, they had them deported.
It's an H-1B, as in boy, I think. All right, but tell me what your point is, because we don't have much time here.
Well, I think this is part and parcel of exporting our high-tech jobs. We can't export the people that build our houses, pick our food, you know, do, you know, maid service. You know, you can't send that over to
India. We're outsourcing everything but CEO positions, as
right.
It looks like.
So since we can't outsource those positions, why don't we bring the cheap labor in?
Interesting point, Van. Thanks for the call. 303-382-1150. Is that what Bush is trying to do? Mark in Aurora. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi. My thought on it all was if the, you know, if you pay somebody more, there's a lot more people willing to take a job. And, you know, like, for instance, right now, I'm a painter, and my competition is illegal labor a lot of times. So, you know,
so when you're bidding for a job, does it go simply by cost? Does it go by skill? Are you finding that you've got to lower your estimates in order to compete with the illegals? Do you not bother? Is it that you've restricted yourself to a more affluent audience? I mean, tell me what goes on for you.
Well, it's kind of a case-by-case kind of thing. Sometimes you run into it where they say, look, we've just been paying this to get this painted.
Will you? And do they ask you if you're going to match it?
Not usually, no. And usually I won't. I've got to live. You know, I could go broke sitting at home.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, I feel for people coming across the border wanting something better for themselves. But...
So how do you feel, since you are somebody who may be directly affected here, how do you feel about what Bush is trying to do?
It's hard to sort out because of those two issues, you know. You want your pay to be high,
mm-hmm.
and you want your work to be valued. And as far as going out, like, to the farm fields and picking fruit, if it paid a living wage, why wouldn't that be a good thing to do? I mean, I'm not above that, and I don't feel it's demeaning at all.
It's not about being demeaning. It's very hard work. And you're also, you got to breathe in all those pesticides and everything else, and you're paid very little for it. And your living conditions are not the greatest. It's very tough work, and people, spoiled. We're spoiled. Even people who are looking hard for jobs, or a lot of people who have given up looking for jobs, they don't want to be bothered about it. They don't want to do it. They don't want to do that kind of work.
But your living conditions are dependent on your pay. I mean, if you were...
That's true. And then you've got... And then people will... But then people may not pay what... If you are going to pay a more living wage to farm workers, then you've got to raise the cost. The agricultural entities are not going to absorb it. They're going to pass it on to the consumer. And then the consumers probably won't buy as much because a lot of people are still out of work. And so you've got a whole spiral here. What'd you say?
we solve the obesity problem at the same time in America.
Well, I hadn't thought about that, Mark. So, I thank you for the call. 303-382-1150. I'm Edith Goldstein. We're talking about illegal immigration. But President Bush would give illegal workers a whole set of new rights. How do you feel about that? Is your work threatened if that is occurs? Is it only a political ploy on his part? Is it a bow to the realities of an economy that couldn't really thrive as well as it does without the broad use of illegal workers? 303-382-1150. How are you personally affected? I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC Enid Live. 2:36, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Enid. Good afternoon. Cloudy, 48 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by RAD. A Denver police officer was shot and wounded this morning following a traffic stop. After the shooting, police conducted an intense manhunt for about 90 minutes before arresting the suspect. The officer was treated and released from Denver Medical Center. The 2004 legislative session is underway. Things got started today with lawmakers from both sides of the aisle sounding a conciliatory tone. Tomorrow morning at 11, Governor Bill Owens will deliver his State of the State address. The Elbert County Sheriff's Department has recommended that Jacqueline McCune face two felony charges in connection with a fatal dog mauling in November. McCune owned the three pit bulldogs that attacked and killed Jennifer Brooke. The recommended charges are criminally negligent homicide and violation of the dangerous dog law. In sports, the Denver Nuggets take on the L.A. Lakers tonight at the Pepsi Center. The Lakers beat the Nuggets by 2 points when they last played in December. RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety, says please plan ahead. Designate before you celebrate. Designated drivers rock. Learn more at RADD.org. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:38.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
KNRC News Time is 2:39. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The milder air working its way across certainly does take the icy edge off things and will rise up closer to a seasonal norm today with mostly cloudy skies, topping out around 45 for the high. Overnight lows tonight around 20. It'll be a sunnier day tomorrow, highs in the 40s, and then mid-40s to mid-50s with sunshine on Friday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's cloudy, 48 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:40. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Warm up your winter with a roof-raising celebration of the music and times of electrifying jazz legend Alberta Hunter, told in the Key of Blues. The new Denver Civic Theater at 721 Santa Fe Drive presents a loving tribute to an icon of the blues, legendary songstress Alberta Hunter, whose international career spans a century. Cooking at the Cookery played to record-breaking crowds throughout the country, including Phoenix, New York, and Chicago. Critics agree the show is red-hot, astonishing, electrifying, delicious entertainment. Cooking at the Cookery, set in 1977, is written, directed, and choreographed by Marion J. Caffey. It stars Tony nominee Ernestine Jackson and Janice Lorraine, who impersonates Hunter with sass, energy, and musical savvy, said Donald Lyons of the New York Post. Tickets just $40, Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m., weekend matinees at 3 p.m., Sunday at 7 p.m., special $30 price on Wednesdays. On sale at Ticket West Outlets, King Supers, by calling 866-464-2626 or at www.denvercivic.com.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major indexes closed mixed for the second straight day. This time, the Dow Industrials lost 10 points to 10,529. The NASDAQ hit a 29-month high, rising 20 points to 2078. The S&P 500 gained 3 points to 1126. Big board volume was about 1.7 billion shares. Advancers beat decliners by a 6-5 margin. Nortel Networks, one of the day's busiest stocks. It also hit a fresh 52-week high and jumped 19%. Nortel has struck a deal to supply Verizon Communications with the equipment for internet phone service. Nortel also received an analyst upgrade. Rival Lucent Technologies even more active today. It rose 7% after signing a deal to expand a Brazilian mobile phone company's network. And Circuit City, one of the day's big losers, sliding almost 12% after saying same-store sales were down 2% last month. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close as your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
242 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. We've been talking about President Bush wants to give broad new rights to illegal workers. He is proposing a sweeping overhaul of the nation's immigration laws that could give the legal legal status to millions of undocumented workers already in the United States. Under this proposal, which effectively amounts to an amnesty program for illegals with jobs in the U.S., an undocumented worker could apply for temporary worker status here for an unspecified number of years with all the employee benefits like minimum wage and due process, according to those legally employed, so that you'd have to pay them at least minimum wage. It's a blatant bid for the Hispanic vote. It also supports employers. What do you think? 303-382-1150. How does it impact you? How does it affect you? Does it affect you at all? If you're a house painter, as our last caller was, or a painter, how does this kind of competition affect you? Does it add to? Is it an acknowledgement of what is already reality in this country? 303-382-1150. A former Enron Corporation, the CFO, Andrew Fastow, and his wife reportedly are negotiating plea bargains that could send this high-powered couple to federal prison for their roles in the accounting scandal that brought down Enron. And as you know, they're recruiting a jury right now for the Martha Stewart trial, so that is also underway. One other thing that's going on here is that we haven't had a chance to get to, is that a battle is looming. A judge has dealt another blow to the voucher plan. Colorado school voucher supporters suffered another legal blow when a Denver judge upheld a decision that temporarily halted the voucher system. It's a one-sentence decision from District Judge Joseph Meyer. It puts the program's fate further into limbo as voucher supporters had hoped to move ahead with the plan while the issue is being taken to the state Supreme Court. Meyer, in a two-pronged decision last month, placed an injunction on the program, but not before ruling that the voucher law violates the state constitution because it strips control from school boards. I'm glad that the voucher laws is on hold right now. I don't like the idea of vouchers. I think it's just running away from the problem. And here's something that we knew was going to happen. It's happened. The Paul Childs family files notice that it's going to sue the city. Johnny Cochran's firm represents the Child family. Remember, he's the slain teenager, 15 years old, disabled, holding a knife. He was shot and killed by a Denver police officer. The family has served notice that it will sue the city for at least $5 million. Paul Childs died in July after a confrontation with Officer James Turney, who responded to a report that the teen was trying to stab his mom with a kitchen knife. There was a lot of outrage in the community, and Michael Thompson, Paul's uncle, said, one of the things I want to find out is, why did Officer Turney shoot? I mean, he had two officers there trained to use a taser. The notice of claim alleges that the boy's killing was a result of actions that were intentional, reckless, and, quote, deliberately indifferent. Anyone who wants to sue a governmental entity in Colorado is required to file a notice within 180 days of an incident. A lawsuit in state court must be filed within a year of the incident. So, anyway, as we knew what happened, the Child's family has given notice to the city that it intends to sue for at least $5 million. Another blow to the state to the voucher plan. Thank goodness for that. Where are you on that issue? I think it's just running away from the problem. The ex-CFO of Enron is trying to negotiate a plea. Meanwhile, Kenneth Lay, as far as we know, roams free, selling properties hither and thither in Aspen. And President Bush, we're talking about the fact that he would give illegal workers brand new rights. President Bush is in the soup again. Democratic presidential hopefuls have criticized him for suggesting how employers could avoid paying overtime to 1.3 million workers who would be newly eligible for overtime. The Labor Department has repeatedly touted the premium pay that lower wage workers would be guaranteed under its plan to revamp overtime pay requirements, but the proposal also provides options to employers to avoid those increased costs. So they're trying to work out legislation where, or work out rules where, regulations where you don't get the same overtime pay that you once used to, that you get some premium pay instead, but then it gives directives to employers as to how to avoid premium pay. What an administration. 303-382-1150. Arianna Huffington is arguing that she believes that Howard Dean is electable. She said that anything short, that believing that he's not electable is nothing short of idiotic. She's turned into a Deanie. I guess we'll call him Deanies. I made that up. Dean is electable, she says, precisely because he's making a decisive break with the spinelessness and pussyfooting that have become the hallmark of the Democratic Party. Let me ask you something. With Bush coming out now in favor of illegals, what should be Howard Dean's position? If you were running his campaign, what would you ask him to do? Because here, this is a shameless and blatant bid for the Hispanic vote that Bush is making, even though it is also a bow to what is, the great what is. 303-382-1150. But if you were advising the Democrats, what position should they take in the matter of illegals? What would Howard, what should Howard Dean be saying? It should be kind of, it should be crafty. It should be wily. It should cover things that we haven't thought about. That's what it should be, but I can't think of what it would be now. Far from Dean not being able to compete with Bush on foreign policy, Arianna Huffington says he is the one viable Democrat who is not trying to compete on the playing field that Bush and Karl Rove have laid out. Huffington lambasted Democrats for comparing Dean to George McGovern, arguing that a better comparison is to Robert Kennedy, who she said also was accused of being intemperate when he ran for president in 1968. So here's Arianna Huffington saying that she believes that Howard Dean is electable. What do you think? Joni calling from work. Hi, Joni. You're live with Enid. Joni?
Oh.
Hi, Joni.
Hi. I love your program.
Thank you.
I would like to know if you ever read the Daily Misleader.
I do. I get it. People send it to me.
Okay.
So so I get it that way. Why? What was in there? What have I missed?
Well, today it's about America's schools and funding.
Okay.
So you might want to take a look at that. It's Bush is saying teacher training is up, teacher training money is up, that they've increased the budget, but, you know, still things don't look that good. And I've got it up on my screen here.
Okay.
And
the point you really want to make about Bush is?
He's just making a mess out of the schools. I just think if there are going to be a lot of people who don't like public education. And, you know, really looking for
why is everybody so down on public education? This is how most of us were educated. What is it? Why are they suddenly the scapegoat?
Well, you know, my husband is an educator, and he told me that the public schools were meant to educate the masses. They're not meant to give an excellent education. They're meant to give an education to everybody who wants it. And so you can't please everybody all the time.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, the failures of the public education system might also be laid at the feet of families who are spending less time overseeing their children and hoping that the school system does everything. Because when we were growing up, I think our families contributed. I don't know that my mom really oversaw my homework that much, but I did it, and I did it. I was motivated to do my homework because there was the expectation in the family that that's what you did.
Yeah. No,
and
I
don't know if that same set of expectation exists in a lot of families. And so when kids don't do well in school, it's the school's fault. It's just as easily the parents' fault, I think.
I don't disagree with that at all. But there are parents who simply don't have the time. Single parent families don't have the time to spend with their children that families with two parents and a mother who's home.
I want to say this again, and I don't know if I can say it often enough, and I'm going to piss people off by saying it. If you don't have the time, and if you don't have the money, and if you don't have the emotional resources for children, this is why God invented birth control. Don't have them.
No, you're right.
If you're not going to invest time in your child, do not do the disservice of having that child and bringing this child that you apparently plan to neglect into the world. Don't do it. It's not fair to the kid. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to the community that has to tolerate this child who will misbehave and act out in a thousand ways and maybe wind up on the streets.
No, it starts with the family. It starts with the family for sure. So I just called to ask if you had been reading the Daily Misleader.
I'm really interesting. I'm going to look at it. Joni, thanks very much for the call.
Right,
I appreciate it. Bye. 303-382-1150. Anthony on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I'm making it real quick. The thing is, I know people keep bringing up the part about how much fruit would cost us if we didn't have illegal aliens here picking it or not migrant workers picking it. The thing is, we're paying for it in other ways. Nobody brings it up, but I don't know why. We're paying for it in health care. We're paying for it in higher insurance. We're paying for it in lower property taxes because generally when they move into certain areas, a lot of areas, they don't treat it the way we do.
Oh, come on. Give me, oh, Anthony, please, don't give me that. First of all, a lot of them are paying taxes that they will never get the benefit of because they are not legal. So don't give me that they move into a... This was said of many ethnic groups, Anthony.
What are they doing to get that Social Security number? They're stealing it.
Not necessarily. They may not necessarily be stealing it. And are you going to tell me that it wasn't said of certain ethnic minorities, Anthony, that if they moved into the neighborhood, there goes the neighborhood? Come on.
Ain't nobody beating down their door to move into East L.A.?
Come on,
let's be realistic.
Oh, come on, Anthony. You cannot.
Would you move in East L.A.?
I don't know East L.A., so I can't tell you what we're talking about.
That's my point. So all I'm saying is,
To paint so stereotypically, to paint such a broad brush, is not fair to you, and it's not fair to the group that you're painting. 303-382-1150. The lines are full. Earl, hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, tell me quick, Earl. We don't have much time.
I love your position on children. The resolve that you have, and discipline that people should respect their children and have the time to spend with them. Being a father, I gotta tell you, I agree with you 100%.
I thank you for that. 303-382-1150. Oliver, hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I think throwing money at the public education system isn't going to work either. I don't know exactly what the figures are, but supposedly private schools spend a lot less for pupils than public schools do. So, you know,
no, it's not about money. It is not only about money, though money can help if it's applied in the right way. It's about attitude. It's about the kinds of programs. It's about the level of commitment you're wanting to make as a teacher. It's about a lot of different things. But I agree with you. Money isn't the only issue. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Most people come from one school of thought. Welcome to the beauty of both sides. AM 1150 KNRC.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapaho Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy. Sell quality products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Napoleon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Napoleon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
Tonight on Court TV, an all-new, all-real Forensic Files. A suspicious message.
Why did Kathleen write it down?
And the words of a 9-year-old girl.
She told me my daddy did.
are all investigators have to crack the case of a romance turned tragic.
And he told her, you're going to end up on a cold slab.
Can detectives win this high-stakes game of forensic psychology? Find out on Forensic Files tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific, only on Court TV, the investigation channel.
A KNRC Community Commitment.
The Curtis Arts and Humanities Center announces Live Art, an exhibit designed and coordinated by members of the Greenwood Village Teen Art Board. The exhibit features a 16 by 8 foot mural expressing the teens' outlook on today's art and a room of my own, utilizing objects from their homes. Located at 2349 Orchard Road in Greenwood Village, the Curtis Arts and Humanities Center offers a variety of art and admission is free. For hours and information, call 303-797-1779.
There are about 25 million small businesses in the United States. So why does it seem like they all have the exact same client?
Oh, yeah, I got your invoice. I was just waiting my customary 120 days to pay it.
With Open the Small Business Network, you can get a line of credit with no collateral required and the peace of mind that comes with it. When you have the American Express business card, the card with the savings, rewards, and services of the Open Network behind it. To apply, call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Application subject to credit review. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
AM 1150, KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC. And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:57 on the Wednesday edition of Enid Live. We just have a couple of minutes left. We're talking about immigration. We're talking about education. Let's go right to the phones. Karen Anisel. Hi, Karen. You're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hi. I just started listening to your program recently, but I wanted to...
How did you find us? Were you just surfing?
No, my parents listen to you all the time and my brother, so I just thought I'd listen in to see what it was all about.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So, anyhow, I wanted to comment a couple of things. I'm a school teacher, so I wanted to comment about the voucher system, which I agree with you. I think that's a great thing that they got impacted. And also about the woman who just called recently about being a single parent and so forth and not being able to be involved and so forth and all that. I have to disagree, is that I'm a public school teacher, as I said, and almost every public school offers so many programs for students to succeed, and they have so many electives, and what it comes down to is that students need to take responsibility for their education and say, hey, there's all kinds of things that are offered out here at my school that I can take as far as classes or advanced.
But if there's been no push along those lines in the family home, no expectation that you could be responsible for your education, that education was important, the kids are not going to be motivated to take advantage. They're not going to know, and they're going to be befuddled about it.
That's why we have other people in the schools to help them. We have counselors, we have teachers like me who say, hey, college isn't the only thing that students are going to look forward to after school, because that's not realistic. And I teach an upper middle class school in Jefferson County,
mm-hmm.
and about 80% of our students are college bound. And I tell them, hey, not everybody here is going to go to college, and it may not be for you. But for some of these teachers, I have friends who work in schools that don't have the affluence of parents where I am.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, Karen.
Right,
but what you're basically saying is it's the kids' responsibility, too.
Well, kids and parents. The parents, like you said, number one, have
okay.
to be involved.
We're going to leave it there. We're out of time. Karen, thanks so much. Call us again. Thanks, Joe Anderson, for your fine work. Thank you, Jordan Lyles, for coming back and your fine work. I'll see all of you tomorrow. Let's have lunch together, noon to 3 on KNRC. Doug Kellett up next. Do something generous, will you? Try to leave the world a better place. We'll be talking about cowboy hats tomorrow and find out if they're jock straps under their cowboy hats. Who knows? I'm Enid Goldstein. This is
KNRC 1150. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, 49 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by RAD. A shooting of a Denver police officer this morning sent the officer to the hospital with a bullet wound and led to the arrest of a 23-year-old suspect. Denver police officer Kevin Kreitzer had stopped a white Mustang for speeding. When the driver refused to show his hands out the window, the officer asked the driver to step out of the car. The driver then shot the officer in the arm and went on the run. Police conducted an intensive manhunt for about an hour and a half before arresting Roberts Zamora. Denver Police Detective Teresa Garcia says anytime a suspect fires at a police officer, they're considered a high priority for capture.
Especially with a two-year-old in the car with no regard for his safety. It indicated to us and every officer that responded that this man was certainly to be considered very dangerous.
The two-year-old Garcia referred to was left in the car when the suspect ran off. The child was picked up by his grandfather, but investigators weren't sure of the relationship between the suspect and the child. Officer Kreitzer was treated and released from Denver Health Medical Center about noon today. Lawmakers sounded a conciliatory tone today as they kicked off the 2004 legislative session. Senate President John Andrews discussed last year's fight over redistricting.
We have struggled over putting the map together. Both sides had their reasons. Neither side was